Of us are trying to process the tragedy and feeling nothing but deep disgust for the perpetrator and almost unbearable sympathy for the family and the dignity with which they have conducted themselves. So this is a weird question for me to ask you, but what do we do? Do we ignore Farage and his provocations, or do we tackle them head on?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Nigel Farage has told LBC that he's writing to the Attorney General today, calling for an immediate investigation into the handling of the murder of Henry Novak. Hampshire police has apologised after initially handcuffing the 18-year-old who had been stabbed after his killer lied to officers at the scene and said that he'd been racially abused. 23-year-old Vikram Digwa was jailed yesterday for a minimum of 21 years. Reform UK's leader Nigel Farage has claimed that the treatment of Mr. Novak is evidence of a two-tier policing and culture.
When I say the fish rots from the head down, I'm basically saying that the people that run Hampshire Police need to be gotten rid of quickly. The DEI has to go. Unless we start treating everybody equally according to merit and their own behaviour, then frankly we're going to finish up in a society that is riven apart.
The Independent Police Watchdog says it is investigating the full circumstances. Cabinet Minister Nick Thomas-Simmons spoke to LBC earlier this morning. He said it's clear lessons have to be learnt from the case.
This particular situation, very serious questions to answer. I would hesitate, though, on in terms of the police more broadly. I think I shadowed many Home Office briefs. I used to come on your show regularly to talk about them.
You did.
I think we shouldn't forget around the country police officers who run towards danger and put their bodies on the line when others are walking in the opposite direction. But in this instance, absolutely serious questions to answer.
There's more on this story on the LBC app. Russia has carried out a major attack overnight on cities across Ukraine, killing at least 13 people and injuring more than 100 others. The missile and drone strikes were carried out on the capital Kyiv, as well as on Dnipro and Kharkiv. Police in South Yorkshire searching for a missing 11-year-old boy have recovered a body. Mackenzie Swift was seen going into the River Don in Mexborough on Saturday evening. 18 people have died after getting into difficulty in open water during the recent hot weather. The former SNP chief executive, Peter Murrell, is in court after admitting embezzling £400,000 from the party. Murrell is appearing at the High Court in Edinburgh, where prosecutors are outlining the facts of the case. The 61-year-old, who is the estranged husband of former Scotland First Minister Nicola Sturgeon, will be sentenced later this month. And London's mayor is expected to use a speech today to add pressure to calls for a total ban on social media for under-16s. Sir Sadiq Khan has previously said that the impact of such a measure should be monitored, but is now firmly in favour. A government consultation on the issue is due to report back in the summer. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 33 at 10,372. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for large parts of the UK through today. The heaviest and most prolonged downpours in southern areas, a high of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
So let me get this straight. You pack the sleeping bags?
Yes.
Mosquito repellent?
Yes.
And flipping badminton rackets?
Obviously.
But somehow, the tent is still at home.
Well, technically the garage. Look, on the ring cameras, you can see it there.
Oh.
And there. Hey, where are you going?
To a hotel, Neil. Come on, kids.
Yay!
Always know what's happening at home with Ring. Available now at ring.com and selected retailers.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. A very good morning indeed to you. And what a horrible morning it is. I don't know what to do. I don't often admit that to you. And if I do, it's sometimes a little bit tongue-in-cheek because I get to decide anyway and you kind of have to go along with it. It's almost impossible to pick the worst bit of the murder of Henry Novak, but I think probably the police officer telling him, as he revealed, stated that he'd been stabbed, I don't think so, mate, is probably the most unbearable element of all of it. And those police officers already under investigation by the by the relevant authorities. And the problem is that where you see tragedy and horror, and where you feel disgust and heartbreak, other people see opportunity and feel an almost sort of gleeful relish at the prospect of provoking more violent responses, just as the same people did after the murders in Southport, having helped spread profoundly and entirely untrue lies about the murderer in that case. And of course, when people, as a consequence of those lies, took to the streets to attack entirely innocent people and took to social media to call for pogroms in profoundly illegal ways, they have been lauded and defended by precisely the sort of people who woke up this morning and saw not tragedy, but opportunity. And of course, some people lack the conscience to recognise that and will instead offer platforms and amplifications of calls for, I mean, so perilously close, so vanishingly close to violence that you may not need have bothered with the euphemisms. Respond with cold, hard rage, said Nigel Farage. What does that mean? If not, do what you did after the Southport killings when I was responsible for spreading deep and racist lies. And I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about that. I don't really want to talk about him. And yet, you look across the media spectrum and you see the attention that's being paid to his latest attempts at sowing hatred and division. You, listen, feel what you want about the murderer. I feel deep and abiding hatred towards him. I hope he is never released. You know, it doesn't matter how bleeding your liberal heart may be, there are many, many crimes that just sort of almost compel you to leave any form of compassion or sympathy at the door. He sounds like a hideous little man and has committed a truly, truly heinous crime. Apart from the father, talking about the lack of dignity with which his son died and a police officer telling him that he didn't think he had been stabbed when he'd been stabbed multiple times, the sister, Henry's sister, talking about the hole that has been left in her life was close to unbearable. But do we let him and his hatred and his desire for violence on the streets of our country distract us from the horror of what happened to Henry? Do we let him and his vicious lies about two-tier policing, his deployment of white supremacist slogans like White Lives Matter? Some people referencing George Floyd this morning, a man who was murdered by white racist policemen. Henry Novak murdered by a British youngster, a young British man. Of course, some people want to stick Sikh in the headlines in ways that they would never stick Christian or Jew or some other religions. I can't remember the last time I read about a Catholic murderer, but given that the weapon he used was something that some people of that faith are permitted to carry in public, then I can sort of see why. Daily Mail, in a particularly disgusting stoop, even by their standards, puts the word Sikh in quotes that are attributed to Henry's father, despite the fact that Henry's father did not use the word Sikh, as far as I can tell, in his heartfelt and heartbreaking description of his son's final hours. Police dragged our son across gravel, handcuffed him and left him to die, then treated his Sikh murderer with decency. That's in quotes in the Daily Mail. And yet what he actually said, what Mark Novak actually said, his murderer, however, was afforded decency. He was believed. He was not handcuffed when arrested. He was not handcuffed when transported to the police station. As far as we understand, he was never handcuffed at all. Actually, I just want you to hear his words for yourself. You'll have to ask the editor of the Daily Mail why they've pretended that he used the word Sikh in these comments. Just as you'd have to ask Nigel Farage yourself how he could have woken up this morning and seen opportunity where everybody, half-decent, sees tragedy and horror. Again, I say it again, feel anything you want about the killer. I've got this weird habit of not wanting to say the killer's name when I'm on the radio. It's pathetic. It is genuinely pathetic on my part because it achieves nothing, but it's almost as if you dirty your own tongue by saying it. I just want you to listen to what Peter Novak had to say outside court yesterday. And I think it's also important to remember, when his son's murderer was sentenced to life in prison after an investigation by police officers who Peter Novak thanked. You could be forgiven for not knowing a lot of things about this story if you're following some outlets. The 999 call was made by the murderer's brother. I don't know what the rules are for police turning up, but I would imagine that the first people you turn to are the people that called you. And then a criminal lies, a disgusting criminal tells disgusting lies. And the reaction of the police is so awful that it's almost impossible to believe. It may become easier to believe when we have all the facts, but the reply, I don't think you have, mate, audible on the body cam footage released last night by the police with the family's permission. This would be the police that are somehow engaging in two-tier policing or not to be trusted, or the police that some people want you to start attacking today. They released the body cam footage. So committed are they to full transparency. And you can hear this police officer say, I don't think you have, mate. I've been stabbed and I can't breathe. I don't think you have, mate. Eesh. And I don't know what to do today, because, I mean, there is no phone-in to have about Henry. What happened to him was disgusting and heartbreaking. And there is a phone-in to have about a disgusting man seeking to make political capital out of it and being aided and abetted by members of my profession. Having already seen what happened when, I mean, the riots in Southport were named after him by many people, myself included. We all know what the Farage riots are. We all know that people arrested during them have since then, 20% of the people arrested during those riots have been arrested for domestic abuse. So all the people protecting our women are going home to batter them. And those are the people to whom he speaks. Those are the people who he is calling upon today to respond with cold, hard rage. What do you think he means? Do I need to spell it out? I'll tell you what, there'll be senior police officers up and down this country at the moment thanking God that it's raining. Because if there's one thing that quells vicious violence directed at entirely innocent people, whether they're asylum seekers living in a hotel, a former hotel, a repurposed hotel, or whether they are Sikh human beings who have no more involvement in this crime than you or Nigel Farage does, he wants you to look askance at the very least, to look askance at them. Don't trust the police and don't trust the brown people. What has this story got to do with immigration? Do people start talking about the birth rate whenever somebody who can trace their lineage back to the Doomsday Book commits a murder? Oh, we've got too many people being born in this country. Show me a population of people and there will be some criminals in it. Show me a population of people of colour in this country and they are more likely to die in police custody. They are more likely, if they're a young woman or girl, to be strip-searched by police. Oh, but yeah, but the police are biased against white people. The police are biased against white people, says Nigel Farage, who not long ago was urging hatred against anybody with a Polish surname, like Novak, which is, I think, the most popular surname in Poland, telling me that he wouldn't want to live next door to Eastern European, people of Eastern European heritage. But, hey, where you see tragedy, he sees opportunity. He sees opportunity. And, of course, then you get the, what would it be, the kind of projection, the switching it the other way round, because people respond differently according to the colour of the victim and the perpetrator, and that way madness lies. Whichever way round you see it, you can be absolutely heartbroken and furious about a murder, but you shouldn't be more heartbroken and furious because somebody has introduced the ethnicity of the killer into the conversation. How can you make the murder of Henry Novak about immigration? How can you make the murder of a young man with a Polish surname in beautiful, diverse Britain about immigration? Unless you're sick. And I don't want to talk about it, because I don't want to talk about that sickness. I don't particularly want to talk about the killer's sickness. I tell you what, though, this man deserves better. This man does not deserve to have his son's murder turned into a political opportunity.
Instead of being treated as a dying victim, police formally arrested Henry for assault and read him his rights. That was the last thing he heard. Henry did not die with dignity. He did not die with the care he deserved. He lost consciousness before anyone believed him.
It is 14 minutes after 10, so what do we do then, together, you and I? How do you deal with the fact that a hideous murder, on which we should all be agreed, should never have happened, and the police officers who didn't believe Henry in his dying moments, should be and will be investigated to the nth degree. But what do we do about the fact that we live in a country now where public discourse is such that the people trying to turn it into an opportunity and trying to incite the kind of violence that we saw on our streets after the Southport murders are essentially having a red carpet rolled out for them in some quarters? Not all. I was slightly gratified to see some broadcasters behaving with dignity and morality this morning. But for others, it's, I don't know, it's just good copy, is it? Let's get him on and let him spew his vile provocations unchallenged and I don't know, go out for a nice long lunch or something? That's what I'm going to ask you. What do I do? Seriously, what do I do on a morning like this? 0345 6060 973. Because if I call out Farage, which I'm currently doing in the most obvious and straightforward of ways, because every single thing I've said is true, then I'm being distracted from the real story as well. But how can you not? How can you not? You saw what happened if it goes unchallenged. You saw what happened when the lies on Twitter after the Southport murders went unchallenged. Oh, I didn't just go unchallenged. They got amplified and disseminated by people like Nigel Farage. A woman who called for a pogrom, literally called for a pogrom, got invited onto stage at his party conference and cheered to the rafters shortly after being released from jail. And to claim that this is evidence of a sort of anti-white feeling in a country where police services are routinely found to be suffering from institutional racism is almost beyond comprehension, isn't it? Unless you understand that racism is always part of a triumvirate. It goes hand in hand with shame or shamelessness and deep, deep, deep dishonesty. You can't be a racist unless you're a liar. You come to this story and read about Henry or learn about Henry's murder and think, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to encourage everybody to be even more angry about immigration. What do you do when the murderer is white? Well, I could answer that question. Nothing. Unless he's got a name like Novak, of course, in which case you'd be wanging on about how we have to stop freedom of movement and get all the Eastern European people out of our country. The opportunism is so enormous, so hideous, that I'm afraid I can't really cling any longer to the idea that people can't see it. They just must like it. It's when George Floyd was brought into the conversation this morning that I really found myself reeling. And of course, it is the idea that an outpouring of grief and sorrow for a black man murdered by the police enraged people. They don't think that a black man should ever receive that sort of treatment. The idea of people taking the knee because a black man was murdered by a racist policeman. We shouldn't be extending that sort of dignity and compassion to a black man. And of course, those of us who want nothing but dignity and compassion for all victims of murder somehow get cast as being the enemy of the racists. Oh, I'm happy with that badge. I'm happy with that hat. But I mean, I can't quite see how anybody would bring the racist murder of a black man by a white police officer into a conversation about an opportunistic murder of a white boy by a man with a long history of fascination with violence and fascination with weapons and a criminal who lied and got briefly believed by the police. So what do we do? Do we have to talk about Nigel Farage today? 0345. So, I mean, I'm not being deliberately disingenuous, because if you ring me and tell me that we shouldn't be talking about Nigel Farage, we're talking about Nigel Farage, aren't we? Which is, of course, what he wants. So what do we do? Actually, that's the question. What do we do? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. What do you do? It's a hideous, hideous murder. If, as is being suggested by some people, police officers turn up at the scene and are not responding to the fact that the person who made the call is the person that you listened to first and are instead deciding to treat people differently because they're white, then you'd have to explain all of the crime statistics in this country that point in the opposite direction, that point completely and comprehensively in the opposite direction. So if you have some ghoul, some monstrous character trying to turn Henry's murder into an opportunity, not only for self-promotion and publicity, but also for fomenting and inciting more violence, just remember, what I told you a few months ago. As immigration plummets, these monsters are going to have to start going after people who've been here for years. They're going to have to start going after people whose families have been here for generations. They're going to have to start going after anybody with a slightly foreign surname or with slightly dark skin. Not enough, is it? If immigration comes down to net zero, who are they going to tell you to get angry with? Well, on a day like today, they tell you to get angry with immigrants. Have you ever been on the hook for the crime of somebody about whom you know nothing and with whom you have absolutely nothing in common? The judge has already warned that the Sikh community have been victims of abuse and racism. I don't get that. Like, a tiny, tiny taste of it when I was a kid. And some lads at school, presumably copying their father's or bringing in stuff from home. If the IRA committed an atrocity, then the lads at my prep school who had an apostrophe in their surname would get a little bit of jip. And you'd be utterly baffled by it. But of course, it is the idea that if an Irish organisation commits an atrocity, then all Irish people are either in favour of it, supportive of it, or complicit in it. And that's what you have today. A man who is a Sikh. That's why the word Sikh is inserted inaccurately and for my money, indefensibly, into the Daily Mail headline in quotes, as if his father actually said it, when as far as I can tell, he didn't. You are now supposed to feel hatred towards all, not just all Sikhs, but all brown people, and indeed all immigrants, because Nigel Farage is trying to make this conversation about immigrants. And what do you do? How do we respond to that? 0345 6060973 is the number you need. If I don't do what I just did, do I make things worse or better? If you want to go out and set fire to a hotel today, or you want to go out and punch a Sikh in the face, or you want to go out and articulate the cold, hard rage that creepy Uncle Nigel is ordering you to feel today, I want you to know what you're doing. I don't want you to be able to hide under a cloak of legitimate concerns or the common man's feelings. You are being encouraged to be a violent racist by a man who, a couple of summers ago, unleashed a torrent of violent racism upon the streets of our country and has never said anything close to sorry for it. So if people like me don't point it out, if people like me don't say anything, then can you still pretend? I haven't heard any comment on the fact that of all the men arrested during the Farage riots last time round, I think 20% or more of them have subsequently been arrested for domestic abuse. Those are his stormtroopers, if you like. Those are the front line of his fan base. If you want to follow them, then fine. But I think you need to know what you're doing. I think you need to know what you're doing. 0345 6060973. It's with a very, very heavy heart. And because we respond to events, we very, very rarely find ourselves in the situation of creating events. We respond to events. I think we have to address the attempts to turn this tragedy into poison that Nigel Farage wants to inject into the bloodstream of our population. I think we have to talk about it. Tell me why we shouldn't. 0345 6060973 is the number you need. But also, what do we do about this? What do we do about this? It's a hideous murder. Elements of it are unbearable. Absolutely unbearable. It was horrible enough before Farage turned up trying to make it all about him. Because that's what he's doing. And that's why I've got this weird, I don't quite what the word is. It's really weird dissonance inside me. And Nigel Farage wants to make the murder of a beautiful 18-year-old boy all about him. And I'm kind of helping. Because I think to stay silent is to let that poison course through the bloodstream of our population in the way that it did after Southport. And in a way that he wants it to continue to do so until we all go mad. And we all turn on each other. Nigel Farage wants Henry Novak's murder to be all about him. He's been in hiding for months, desperate to avoid questions about the £5 million he accepted from an immigrant in Thailand. That's worth saying that again, isn't it? The £5 million he secretly accepted from an immigrant, from a beneficiary of migration, from an economic migrant. or a dual citizenship, but he's based in Thailand. He's even got a Thai name to do business in Thailand. But hey, down with immigration. So it's just bonkers. But Nigel Farage wants this murder to be all about him. I think I saw it. It may have been faked. I will be addressing the nation. Who does he think he is? I will be addressing the nation. The king addresses the nation. The prime minister addresses the nation. The manager of the England football team, hopefully, addresses the nation. It's just extraordinary, this combination of moral depravity, pomposity and shamelessness. And yet I still... Listen, come here a minute. All right, because I do this for a living, you know I do, and some days I get on my soapbox. And some days I'm a bit mischievous, and some days I'm the presenter and you're the punter, the listener. And some days I just thank all my lucky stars that I've got a job where I can articulate what I'm feeling to you, and I can invite you to do the same. It helps me, and I know you've been kind enough to tell me in the past that it helps you. And there comes a moment every now and then, incredibly rare, every now and then, where I don't actually know what to do. I've got genuine and profound cognitive dissonance. I think it is disgusting that Nigel Farage wants to make Henry Novak's murder all about him. But I think we have to talk about Nigel Farage and his attempts to turn Henry Novak's murder into both a publicity opportunity for him and another exercise, potentially, in inciting violence. I mean, it's so obvious. I mean, listen, you might like the violence. You might love the violence. But at least you should be honest about it. So what do we do on a day like today? 03456060973 is the number that you need. What alternative do you have to addressing directly the second chapter of Nigel Farage's history of turning tragedies and murders into opportunities and potentially riots? What do you do about it? Sheesh. 03456060973 is the number that you need. I got a lot of questions this morning about how anybody can be so shameless, or how indeed anybody can facilitate such shamelessness, or how anybody can go along with it. And the answer is simple. The answer is simple. If someone of colour commits a crime, it is an opportunity to portray all people of colour in a negative light. In the same way that if the IRA committed an atrocity in the 1970s or the 1980s, a certain type of human being would attack all Irish people or claim that no Irish people could be trusted. If a Pole committed a murder 10 years ago, they'd have been calling for everybody with a Polish surname to have been either deported from the country or prevented from entering in the first place. It just never happens with the majority population. If I committed a crime tomorrow, you wouldn't be held responsible for it. And even when radio presenters were being arrested at a rate of knots for all sorts of hideous crimes, largely against children, nobody pretended that white radio presenters were automatically a problem or automatically suspect. White middle-aged radio presenters can't be trusted because of that long list of media professionals who turned out to be paedophiles. It doesn't ever happen to the majority. Happens to women a bit, but nowhere near on the scale that the other forms of misogyny happen. You just look at crimes like this, and you use them to attack innocent people. That's the difference. That's where the population divides. Do we use this murder to attack innocent people, or do we focus on the guilty? And if the guilty turn out to include the police officers, then by all means go after them as well when we have the facts in front of us. But to turn it into a conversation about immigration, to turn it into a conversation about Sikhs, to turn it into a conversation about Asians? All these words, by the way, are in my inbox already this morning. And to turn it into a conversation about cold rage. Who are you supposed to direct your cold rage at until you have all the facts? Until you have all the facts. Yeesh. You can tell I'm confused because I completely forgot about the 10:15 break, for which I apologise. And as I glance towards the clock, I see that we're almost at the 10:30 headlines, for which I also apologise. And I apologise, because the good things come in threes, for not having a clearer line on this, because there's a part of me that thinks this could be a terrible miscalculation on my part. Don't talk about it, James. Don't tell the truth. I mean, when you're thinking to yourself, should I be telling the truth today, or should I stay silent? What would Henry want? Would he want his murder to be turned into an opportunity to hate all migrants, or to attack immigration?
I don't know. I very much doubt it. His family have spoken with absolute dignity and decorum at every turn, including things that some people won't have told you about. Profound and heartfelt thanks for the investigating officers who are responsible for the fact that this character has been locked up, hopefully for the rest of his life. But of course, some people want you to forget about the fact that justice has been done and has been seen to be done, and want you instead to focus on some mythical persecution of white people by police forces that are routine. Oh, I don't know. Anyway, I'll take some calls in a minute. 0345 60 609 73 is the number that you need. Just to tell me, and tell me I've got it horribly wrong if you want, but I respond to what the media is doing. And the media is allowing Nigel Farage to turn the murder of Henry Novak into an opportunity to foment hatred. And I don't think it could be correct to stay silent. But I am, I suppose, open to persuasion. Here's Dominic Ellis with the headlines.
Reform UK's Nigel Farage says that he's writing to the Attorney General calling for an investigation into the handling of the murder of Henry Novak. Hampshire Police has apologised for handcuffing the 18-year-old who had been stabbed after his killer lied to officers at the scene, claiming that he'd been racially abused. The former SNP chief executive Peter Murrell has appeared at court after admitting embezzling £400,000 of party funds. Murrell pleaded guilty last week to taking money over 12 years to buy cars and luxury goods, hiding the spending with false invoices. He's due back in court in 3 weeks for sentencing. And London's mayor has told LBC that he's now backing calls for a total ban on social media for under-16s. Sir Sadiq Khan said it's the only way to stem the harms happening right now. A consultation on the issue is due to report back in the summer. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for large parts of the UK. The heaviest and most prolonged downpours in southern areas, a high of 21 degrees.
This is LBC.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is our family, how they're getting on, if they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out, and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Get iPhone 17 in the Vodafone Business Summer Sale. iPhone 17 is built for business with all-day battery life and the powerful A19 chip for fast, efficient performance. Experience it all on the best network for business and save £300. Hurry, offer ends the 22nd of July. Vodafone Business.
Businesses with up to 9 employees only. Based on iPhone 17 and 24-month unlimited airtime plan. Best network is awarded at the Mobile Industry Awards. Saving calculated over 36 months.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £122 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop. Whoop whoop! Thank you, faraway person.
Get in tonight's draw, EuroMillions, from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
The people of Britain love their ice baths. They've bought loads of them. With the Barclaycard Platinum, they could also save with 0% interest for up to 24 months on purchases, which is a nice, warm feeling. What you buy is your business. Helping you pay less interest is ours. Subject to financial status, T's and C's and exclusions apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable and 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
I think just partly to assuage my own misgivings and potential embarrassment, I'm going to play Mark Novak's words at the beginning of every segment before we have a conversation about the correct way to respond when a politician is attempting to, with the help of some members of the media, is attempting to turn it into an exercise in self-aggrandizement and quite possibly incitement to the sort of violence that he helped incite after the Southport riots. So just keep this in your mind if you can.
Instead of being treated as a dying victim, police formally arrested Henry for assault and read him his rights. That was the last thing he heard. Henry did not die with dignity. He did not die with the care he deserved. He lost consciousness before anyone believed him.
And, I, you know, you're a father, I'm a father. I was an 18-year-old boy once who you know, got into bother and sometimes, not suggesting Henry did this for a minute, but I would have a temptation sometimes to let my mouth run away with it. You just can't process the horror of it. And then you wake up and find out that Nigel Farage is trying to make it all about him. How do you respond? What is the correct way to respond to such vampiric shamelessness? Sean's in Birmingham. Sean, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. Hi, just on that first question of what do we do, what do we talk about here, I think the important bit at the first point is to have the conversation to start with, because if we don't do this together, no one in mainstream media with a large platform will. So I welcome you opening up the phone lines on this today.
I don't know that that's entirely fair. I mean, my ego is big enough, so normally I mean, I'm sure other people are going to be equally disturbed by what Nigel Farage is doing. Time will tell, but thank you, I suppose.
I think it's to provide the criticism that is required. So there's a necessary separate conversation about Farage, but there's also a conversation about Mark Novick and the family of what would they want, because I think what I'm seeing here from that emergency broadcast that Farage called it this morning, he is trying to do the Farage riots V2. There is this conversation of rage, White Lives Matter, the conflation with George Floyd, and that he got all of this and he was a criminal and we should be doing more for Novak. That's the messaging that I took having watched that emergency broadcast as to what he was trying to put out there. And I think it's a conversation of, has he considered in his response what the family would want? I don't think at all. He is using a death of a young man as a political football, and it is disgusting.
There are points to be made about the carrying of blades, some of which inevitably and correctly will encompass the dispensations given to some Sikhs, although neither the killer's father nor brother carried a blade. So, as the judge pointed out in court, the dispensation didn't really or shouldn't really have applied to this scumbag. And that is a conversation that can be prompted by this. But to have a conversation about, to try to turn it into a conversation about immigration, the problem with what you just said is that one day a family will join in. Do you remember the murder of Alice Gross in West London in Ealing? And the man who murdered her was a Latvian immigrant, I think. And the family begged publicly for people not to turn it into a conversation about immigration or not to let it be a conversation about immigrants. And they were, of course, completely ignored. And I agree with you today about Henry's family, but one day there'll be a murder that is committed by somebody of colour, and the family will be persuaded to agree with Nigel Farage's provocations and incitement. So I don't know that it can be the only guiding light. Sometimes society has to, in the same way that the families don't get to go to court and pass sentence or judgment on murderers, neither do they necessarily get to determine the parameters of the conversation that follows.
Yeah, and I guess that comes on to what I was thinking of the second question, and perhaps that's more important than with that considered, which is what went wrong in this case and how do we make sure it doesn't happen again? Because as you mentioned there, the conversation is being pointed to, oh, if we didn't have immigration, this wouldn't have happened. That's the takeaway, and it's ridiculous.
They did it with Lee Rigby as well, of course.
Yeah.
When Fusilier Rigby was murdered, and I think his mother asked for people to stop making it about race or immigration or any of those issues, and yet here on they went.
And I think of Southport as well, you know, the desire for the criminal to be, you know, a asylum seeker, a small boat migrant, as they love to say, to push this narrative further. And I think the conversation needs to be, I think one of the conversations that I think needs to happen is thinking about the police. Now, I think what the police did there was wrong from what we've seen of the footage, what we've seen from the commentary. But I think if I was put in a policeman's shoes and I was being told, I've just had a hate crime done to me,
And it's been reported by the killer's brother. I think I don't know enough about the police procedures to know or to state how significant that is. But you presume that the first response when you turn up at a crime scene is to listen to the people that reported the crime.
Exactly, but at the same time, you've got to stay curious, and yes, I think the curiosity...
And they haven't been curious enough.
No, and I think as well there's... I mean, it comes down to, this is not a conversation that we're having, but, you know, elements of police brutality, and this is the criminal, I am the police officer,
yeah,
we're going to dismiss the criminal
Yeah, but it's also, this is what Farage has done, the reason why they didn't believe Henry is because Henry's white.
But this is the thing, it's nothing to do with race in that sense, of course.
Of course, but the desperation to believe that. And of course, you know, it's not confined by any stretch of the imagination to Farage and his close compatriots. I'd say that 80% of high-profile media figures, you could see it during the George Floyd story, are absolutely of the same view, that you shouldn't be affording dignity to black people. And if a white person is badly treated by the police, it's because they're white. It's extraordinary, the dishonesty involved in holding that, maintaining that position.
Exactly. And I think what we have to do is just make it crystal clear and to criticise Farage for this, because, you know, go on.
Well, then you're doing the thing he wants you to do, which is making it about him. All about him.
But this is why I say we have the two conversations side by side. So what is the conversation that we should be having from the fact that a terrible crime has happened and, you know, the actions that should have taken place haven't, but alongside that, having the conversation about what is Farage not talking about, what is Farage decided to ignore to... you know, pursue his political agenda of making us fight each other instead of having a conversation and coming together and saying what has went wrong here and how do we make sure something this terrible never happens again.
And that is going to be a conversation about knife crime, probably about police processes, but I'd need a police officer to tell me a little bit more about that. If I phone in to report a crime, even if I've committed it, surely the police are going to listen to me first when they turn up. I mean, let's take Sean's guidance then and ask police officers if they have any insights. Because, I mean, listen, if this officer turns out to deserve all the opprobrium that is being heaped upon him, then bring it on. Absolutely bring it on. But I would be interested to know whether police officers following this story have a clear idea, and I don't mean secret memos produced out of a hat by Nigel Farage, I mean a clear idea of what would have happened in that moment when you turned up. I reported the crime, or my brother reported the crime, so I turn up and I talk first to the person that reported the crime. And they've accused Henry of being the culprit. And you take their version of events first? I mean, is that comprehensible or defensible? And it's unbearable. It's utterly, utterly heartbreaking. But, of course, what is not happening here, and what Sean points us towards, is a world where... if the ethnicities of these two men were swapped around, our response would be exactly the same. I mean, it probably wouldn't be exactly the same because of the long history of genuine institutional racism demonstrated by police officers, as most obviously evidenced if you want to hop across the Atlantic in the case of George Floyd. So it's as if they're taking a genuine racism and dismissing it and inventing racism and fermenting it. It's quite extraordinary. I'm not aware of any suggestions that this murder occurred because of the ethnicity of either the victim or the perpetrator, and yet somehow Nigel Farage is successfully turning it into a conversation about race and immigration. It's like all his Christmases came at once. Thank you, Sean. Robert's in Potter's Bar. Robert, what do you think?
Well, I think lots of things, James.
Don't we all, Robert? But specific to this conversation, if you could.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I think that the question of should we or shouldn't we be talking about Farage is so tricky. But
no, is.
I think ultimately, yes. But the problem with talking about him is those that follow him or those that might follow him only hear the stuff they want to hear and don't hear the bad stuff, the truth. But people like him, and there are many around the world, I believe, use one medium and prey on one part of human beingness which is fear. When you can identify a group of people or create a group of people and tell them that they should be afraid of something and then demonstrate in real life why and how they should be afraid of it, they will follow you to the ends of the earth. Mm. I mean, I don't want to bring religion into it, but there's the best sales job of all time. But tell people they should be afraid of something and you've got the solution, they'll follow you at their own detriment. And when you're in an echo chamber and everyone's saying the same thing, obviously, it reinforces the point to you. And when as will happen, you know, a person of color, or whether they're Mexicans and they're all rapists and terrible people, or whether they're this, that, or the other, taking our jobs, or women or men, occurs, it just reinforces to those people that are thick enough to believe it that it's true.
And 10 years ago, it was people of Polish or Romanian heritage.
Yeah. And in 10 years' time, it will be
Irish people, you know, again.
Yeah, well, I mean, it will be someone else again. And I think, you know, we even see it, you know, every day of every weekend. You know, football teams, the supporters of which literally hate, many of the supporters of which literally hate, and in some cases will aggressively pursue them, because they're told that they're different. I did some work many years ago for an amazing charity, which was a charity against racism, and I went to a rather rough prison in the north of England. Mm. And spoke to many hardened prisoners who were clearly racist, but literally had no idea that they were, because all they had grown up with is, if you're different to us in whatever way, you've got to be wiped out. And they weren't.
And it works, and we sit here wringing our hands and knitting our brows and worrying our beads about it, but it just works. It works really, really well. A terrible murder has occurred. Go out and attack people that had nothing to do with it. It worked in Southport, and it doesn't seem to be working in quite the same way here. I mean, my inbox is not a completely reliable gauge of these things, but a number of people obsessed with the ethnicity of the murderer speaks to precisely the flames that Farage is trying to fan. But I wonder whether it works as well this time. You know, I don't know. Just the image, isn't it? You need the emotional heft, whether it's little girls at a Taylor Swift concert or this poor boy lying there and the police not realizing that he's dying and telling him that he's lying. You just feel horror and heartbreak at that. And of course, some people feel that sort of burgeoning sense of gleeful anticipation. I can turn this into something to attack entirely innocent people with. If the police are guilty, then, you know, no punishment is too harsh for them. But for everybody else that is being put into the firing line as a consequence of this hideous crime, it's just utterly, utterly shameful. So you either welcome it or you're repulsed by it. There's no room for a middle ground anymore. A murder has occurred. Who are you cross with? The murderer. And possibly the police who responded very badly. Who else are you cross with? Well, nobody, obviously. Or you're in a gang that's cross with all brown people, all Sikhs, all Asians, all immigrants, all foreigners. And if you're in that gang, then you need to be honest about it. You need to tell the truth. 10:47 is the time. And of course, he keeps offering you opportunities to pretend that that's not what's going on, to pretend that you've got legitimate concerns or that you're just asking questions. Extraordinary. 0345 606 0973 is the number you need to add to the conversation about how you respond to a politician, any politician, who takes a hideous murder, whether it is in Southport or Southampton, and seeks to turn it into both a personal opportunity and an incitement to rage or violence or both. It's 10:48.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Three teenage boys convicted of serious sexual assault of girls as young as 14 were given rehabilitation orders and paid £26 in court fees. Now, I know they're teenagers, but what are we doing here?
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Ready for a new kitchen? Wix kitchen experts can support you with clever designs and a professional installation. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Feel that? That little buzz of excitement? That's the weekly flutter. With chances to win up to £10,000, enter British Heart Foundation's lottery for a thrill with goodwill behind it. Because when you play, it helps fund life-saving research. So go on, keep playing, keep winning, keep us beating. Search BHF Lottery. Gamble responsibly, over 18s only. T's and C's apply. Please see our website for more details. British Heart Foundation is a registered charity.
Notice the change in your hearing? Well, get a hearing check from Specsavers. Oh, not sure where to start? Well, we're very flexible. Book one online, on the phone, on your lunch break, on Saturdays, on the same day if you're lucky. Oh, you only miss the odd word. But what if the odd words you're missing are nice ones like love you, or important ones like duck? Oh, too expensive, is it? All right, we like you. We'll do it for nothing. For free hearing checks, should have gone to Specsavers.
Get 100-1 on England to lift the trophy when you sign up to BetVictor. Opt in and deposit a fiver. Maximum stakes £1. Good luck and come on, England.
We simply remember our favourite things and then we'll feel so glad.
For all your favourite things, visit BetVictor. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. Enhanced winnings paid in free bets and expire in 7 days. Offer expires 12 p.m. 29th of June 2026. GambleAware.org.
Ocado price match your shop to over 10,000 products from Tesco.com. So you can get everything you need for less than you think. Should free up some budget for that emergency tub of ice cream. Ocado, the online supermarket. Max £10 voucher for difference on like-for-like shop. Valid 28 days. Excludes marketplace. Products may vary. Geographical restrictions, min spend and charges apply. Terms at ocado.com/price promise.
James O'Brien on LBC. Text 84850.
Instead of being treated as a dying victim, police formally arrested Henry for assault and read him his rights. That was the last thing he heard. Henry did not die with dignity. He did not die with the care he deserved. He lost consciousness before anyone believed him.
I make no apology for playing that to you several times this morning. It is the, it's by far the most heartbreaking element of Henry Novak's murder. To my unprofessional and untutored eye, the, at the very least, horribly inadequate response of the police. But I stress I'm not joining any lynch mobs there until I understand the facts and the protocols a little better. To that end, I think we will be joined a little later in the programme by someone who will really know what goes on in these situations. But to listen to that and think, I know what I'll do, I'll make a speech about immigration. And I'll tell people to be full of rage. Because the reason why that poor boy was treated in the way that he was because he's white. I didn't see that bit coming. I predicted the movement of the spotlight. Once immigration started plummeting, they would go after people who had foreign surnames, like Novak or even O'Brien, but most obviously, of course, in the first instance, Asian surnames. Chris makes a good point. He says, I find it interesting that the EDL used to embrace some members of the British Sikh community as the acceptable face of brown immigration because of the friction between some Sikhs and Muslims. It highlights how truly vile they are, and there'd be some wake-up calls this morning for people who facilitated and went along with that behaviour. But the idea that you turn it into a conversation about immigration, but also once the immigration balloon has burst, once Keir Starmer has, to my mind, somewhat shamefully capitulated to the narrative that immigration is bad when it obviously isn't, what do you do next? Well, you go after people who are not immigrants, but who are a little bit foreign. And also, you claim that you're discriminated against. That, I don't know how I didn't see that coming. As all they do, these people, is whine or shout. And when they're not shouting, they're whining. And some people can do both at the same time, which we heard earlier this morning. And you just whine about being a victim. Poor me, poor me. Always victims. There's only one victim in this crime, and it is, to say the very least, highly unlikely that what happened to him happened because of the colour of his skin. which of course is not something you can say in all of the cases and subsequent miscarriages of justice that have been found to have been down to institutional racism on the part of the police. So what they want, these people, is they want two things. They want permission to be racist, and they want people alleging racism to be silenced. And that means when someone alleges racism wrongly, like this character, this murderer, this scumbag, they want to use that as a way in which to undermine or discredit all allegations and accusations of racism. Because if you're a racist, what do you want to happen to accusations and allegations of racism? You want the accuser and the alleger to be maligned and silenced. So what this scumbag does with his hideous lies about Henry Novak is he gives enormous amounts of ammunition to racists who want allegations and accusations of racism to be excised from the record, even when they're completely accurate. So many elements to this, when you start thinking about it, that are not only hideous, but also deeply, deeply reflective of where we are at the moment as a country, which I think is why we have to talk about it. I also should tell you this. The family of the killer has apologised to the family of murder victim Henry Novak, and also for bringing the Sikh community into disrepute. The statement comes as the murderer's mother, and I'm not saying the names, and I don't know why, and it probably doesn't matter, but that's just something I do. Await sentencing for assisting an offender by taking the knife used to kill Henry in Southampton back to the nearby family home. She'll be sentenced on the 17th of July. In a statement through the Sikh Press Association, the rest of the family said, "The loss of a young life is a grief that no family should ever have to carry. We are deeply sorry for the pain and suffering the Novak family has had to endure." They go on, "We love our son. We will continue to love him. That love does not stand in opposition to the sorrow we feel for the Novak family. Both are real and both will remain with us for the rest of our lives. We would give anything to turn back time so the path of both Henry and our son never crossed that night. We cannot change what has happened. We just hope that no further pain is caused in its name." Well, some people really want further pain to be caused in its name, of course, which is why we're having the conversation that we're having. Sarah's in Tunbridge. Sarah, what would you like to say?
Well, you wondered if you should be discussing this.
Yes.
And if it gave more oxygen to you-know-who.
Mm.
And I'm delighted you are giving space for this, because I've just had to turn the radio off most times, because you only hear the other side, and you hear Farage going on about, you know, we're second-class citizens and, you know, the double-tier this and that and the other, which is such a load of baloney.
Well, nothing says second-class citizen like trousering £5 million from a foreign-based crypto billionaire. They're the real victims here. I think we can all agree about that.
Yeah, well, I immediately thought back to poor old Doreen and Neville Lawrence and their son being murdered.
Mm.
And he was with his friend Dwayne Brooks. And he was taken, he wasn't actually arrested then, but he was taken into the police station and abused. Anyway, it took 20 years before the criminals, who were white thug boys, into jail. And I believe only two of them really paid the price. And the other one, the most horrendous case I'm thinking of, is, I don't know if you remember, an Iranian man. He had learning difficulties. He was living on an estate in Bristol, and he was murdered in 2013. He had phoned the police 85 times for the abuse he was getting from the estate he lived on, and, you know, harassed and his windows broken and you name it, and spat in the street, all that. They eventually murdered him. The police, by the way, did nothing about it.
Bijan Ebrahimi, I think you're talking about.
That's
it. Was murdered by one of his neighbours who'd falsely accused him of being a paedophile. I'm just conscious of the time, because...
Okay, all I'm saying is that these cases were, like, this horrible case...
But this isn't part of the same process. No one is suggesting that Henry died because he's white. Nigel Farage is suggesting that the police treated him inadequately because he's white. But even he isn't shameful enough to claim that this was a racist murder or a race-based murder.
No, but what I'm saying is...
Well, I'll take that back. Of course he's shameful enough to do that. He just hasn't done it yet.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is the police... you know, kind of sided with the whites on this and on those two cases as well.
Sure.
I mean, so, you know, So for once, somebody believed wrongly in this case, a dark-skinned person.
Yes.
But let's face it, it's not the way it usually works. I'm white. I do not feel a second-class citizen. I don't feel I've ever been treated in a derogatory way by, I'm lucky, by anybody.
Mm.
But, you know, it's the, I Farage is a very, very dangerous piece of work, I believe.
No, we saw that after Southport.
And he's, yeah, but, yeah, I mean, there's burning of the terrified people who've escaped God knows what, living in a hotel. And, you know, they're basically some people trying to set fire to them.
Mm.
I mean, that is the state we're in. I mean, to me, I am now 80. I was born exactly 1 month after the World War ended in Europe. So my birthday's next Monday, and I'll be 81. Mm. And all I've heard just so distresses me that we just look like we're going back to the 30s. It terrifies me. I am actually frightened. I am frightened what's going to happen this election. I'm frightened what's going to happen at the proper election. I am actually frightened.
Because the forces that are on the march are not new.
They're not, and that is what's so scary. But if you keep, and why particularly, I have no idea. You did the most brilliant thing on him, you know, over that Brexit thing, and he's never dared come on your show again.
Mm.
But the BBC keeps having him on Question Time. God alone knows.
Oh, no, they're horribly biased against him. I don't know if you've seen the latest news, because he hasn't been on Desert Island Discs yet.
I've had to turn the radio off. I can't, because I can't cope with this kind of, quote, unbiased discussion about it. I mean, I'm horrified at what has gone on.
And of course, it's not happening by accident. I think sometimes, and you mentioned the war and your birth shortly, just as it ended, you mentioned that, and I think we look back on the harnessings of hatred and think that they've happened, you know, in the darkness, or they've happened secretly and they've suddenly emerged fully formed into the light, and decent people sit there going, how the hell did we not notice that that was going on? But of course, the opposite is true. It happens in the daylight. It happens on your radio. It happens on your television. It happens right in front of you, and you don't notice how horrific it is until it's too late. And those of us who do notice, those of us who do realise, I suppose what you've rung in to tell me is that you can never shut up about it, Sarah.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Shall we end on a slightly happier note?
Well, no, can I just say...
Well, I wanted to say happy birthday, but yeah, quickly, before it stops.
Well, let me...
No, it's not going to work. I'll tell you what, I'll bring you back after the news, because I can. It's just gone 11 o'clock. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, and if that's not a hook and tease, if that doesn't keep you tuned in to find out what on earth it is that Sarah still needs to get off her chest, then I don't know what will.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Attorney General is to review the jail sentence given to the killer of Henry Novak following criticism it was too lenient. Vikram Digra was jailed yesterday for a minimum of 21 years for the student's murder in Southampton last December. Hampshire Police has apologised after handcuffing Henry, who had been stabbed, after Digra lied to officers claiming that he'd been racially abused. Speaking to LBC this morning, the Reform UK leader Nigel Farage accused police of treating an accusation of a racial slur more seriously than murder.
As much as we can condemn those police officers, I mean, just think of it. You've been stabbed in the street. The blue lights arrive. You think help's at hand. You say, I've been stabbed. And the police officer says, I don't think so. The last words Henry Novak heard in his life were him being read his rights by the police because he'd been accused of making a racial slur.
In the past half hour, the family of Vikram Digra have released a statement. In it, they apologise to Henry Novak's family and also for bringing the Sikh community into what they call disrepute. The former SNP chief executive Peter Murrell has appeared in court this morning after admitting embezzling £400,000 of party funds. Murrell pleaded guilty last week to taking money over 12 years to buy cars and luxury goods, hiding the spending with false invoices. The High Court in Edinburgh has heard that he spent more than £42,000 on purchases which were not
for party purposes. Alan Cameron, KC, listed a small sample of some of the items purchased.
Umbrellas with a total cost of £1,990.50. Two salt and pepper grinders from Lalique, costing £2,618.16. A robotic lawnmower, including installation for his home address, costing £3,070.
Murrell, who is the estranged husband of the former Scotland First Minister Nicola Sturgeon, will be sentenced later this month. The Mayor of London has told LBC that he's now backing calls for a total ban on social media for under-16s. Sir Sadiq Khan says it's the only way to stem the harms happening right now. A consultation on the issue is due to report back in the summer. You can read more of Sir Sadiq's exclusive remarks on the LBC app. The World Meteorological Organization is warning that the next phase of the natural El Niño weather pattern could become one of the strongest on record. Climate experts are predicting more droughts, flooding and wildfires around the world. And Southampton's manager, Tonda Eckhurt, says he takes full responsibility after the club was kicked out of the Championship playoffs for spying on opponents. The club's owner, Dragan Solak, has also backed Eckhurt to carry on in the job. The Football Association has previously announced that it's investigating what happened. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 were trading up 28 points at 10,367. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for large parts of the UK. The heaviest and most prolonged downpours in southern areas later in the afternoon. A high of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Get iPhone 17 in the Vodafone Business Summer Sale. iPhone 17 is built for business with all-day battery life and the powerful A19 chip for fast, efficient performance. Experience it all on the best network for business and save £300. Hurry, offer ends the 22nd of July. Vodafone Business.
Businesses with up to 9 employees only. Based on iPhone 17 and 24-month unlimited airtime plan. Best network as awarded at the Mobile Industry Awards. Saving calculated over 36 months.
James O'Brien on LBC. Text 84850.
6 minutes after 11 is the time. I've often wondered about the phenomenon that sees people more angered by or more concerned about something awful happening according to the shade of the perpetrator or the victim's skin. I've always found it a really odd thing. I can listen, I'm not completely I don't even know what word I'm looking for. I'm not completely immune to prejudice. If someone you loved was a victim of a crime committed by somebody who was here under false pretenses or illegally, then of course you would feel a different form of anger at the fact that they are here at all to commit that crime than you would if they were hurt or killed by someone they knew or somebody who could trace their family history back to the Doomsday Book. But the idea that you'd be more bereft or more grief-stricken is just absurd. And it's a lie. I think it's a lie, at least, that is pandered to by the kind of people we've been talking about today. But enough from me. Sarah had one more thing she wanted to say, and given that it's her birthday on Monday, it seemed only fair to let her say it.
I know, I'm a very, very old lady then. I'm sure I'm younger than my son at the moment, you know, but there you go. I don't pretend to be wise. I just pretend to be what my husband, he's now dead, but I used to say, I'm quite logical. And people used to come up to me and have over the years and said, in horror, obviously, how did Germany happen? You know, meaning the Third Reich.
Yes.
And I used to go, very easily. And that is what's so scary. And what upsets me on top of everything else, I never knew my dad. He died in April as a pilot, 1945. So he died a month at 23 years old. Died a month before the war ended, and I was born a month after. And I think... I get the impression from letters he was a lovely man. And the idea that 80 years later, he died at 23... So a man like Farage, or Nigel Farage, as I call him, can come out with this garbage, and that many people in this country are going to vote for him. It, I have to say, my son and I, we spend our lives screaming at the radio. I mean, he lives in London and he comes visits me, and I mean, he's taking me lunch on Monday. Great. And, you know, we just rant. And
when you see it, you can't unsee it, can you? That's the thing. When you see the patterns. I used to read out the Martin Niemöller poem about first they came for the communists and I did not do it. And I think I used to do it a bit glibly, Sarah, if I'm honest with you. I knew it was powerful and I felt its resonance. But I think somewhere, until Donald Trump became president of the United States of America, somewhere in the back of my mind, I think I still had a sort of... what you might call an inverse bigotry. I still thought, oh, no, my people are better than that. That could never happen here.
I thought I happened to be living with my family, because my mother remarried, in America with the McCarthy... I was only obviously a little girl, but with McCarthyism going on, and she, like me, is very political. I'm afraid on the other side, but... And I can remember her painting the house and watching the McCarthy trials.
Yes.
You know, when he was eventually disowned by everybody, having been idolized and made so many people terrified and lose their jobs and what have you, blacklisting, etc. And to me, that's what's going on in America now. And I'm afraid it's coming here. And it's just, I can't even say gobsmacked. I would say speechless, except I can speak about it.
Yes, and because we can, we have to, I think, is the...
And that's why I'm grateful that you are... I turned you on.
Yes.
And I heard you start, and I thought, oh, I'm not going to hear that. Oh, you know, and I turned over.
Right, thanks.
And sorry about that. And they were talking about it, and so I turned you back.
Yes.
And I have to say, I thought... You're being you. Thank God you're taking the angle you're taking, because I'm not hearing it elsewhere. And it just, for people like me, there has to be somebody somewhere who's speaking out, because we feel so lonely.
And yet Henry Novak's own father said on the steps of the court that he did not want people to use his boy's murder to... create further division and to stoke further hatred, create further division, hatred or tension. So he offers that heartfelt plea. We do not want Henry's murder to be used to create further hatred, division or tension. And up pops Nigel Farage calling for all of those things.
And I always feel, Davey, that's my son, and I've discussed it many times, we'd rather be murdered than be the murderer and have to be the parents of that person. I mean, that is... can you imagine how devastating it is for every murderer's parents, sisters, brothers? It must be, in many ways, worse for them, because they're living, not rightly, but...
I understand what you mean. I do understand what you mean. Is that they have a horrible experience that is not compounded by fatalism. They can't just sort of console themselves with the thought that it is absolutely random and fatalistic. Instead, they'd be thinking they might be responsible for. I mean, listening to Henry say that he felt bad about not being there to look after. Sorry, he felt bad about not being there to look after his boy. And that, I mean, is almost unbearable, the emotion contained within that thought for a parent. But if your boy was a murderer and you were blaming yourself for that, I just wanted to clarify what you were driving at, because I do understand it.
Oh, no, I don't mean, obviously, you know.
No, I know you don't. I understood it, and I just wanted to clarify it. But that idea of not being able to protect your boy is just, it's just unthinkable and unbearable.
Well, the world is probably... Oh, I know I'm...
So you've just got... You pick a side. Either you're with Henry's family, who do not want the murder to be used to create further hatred, division or tension, or you invite Nigel Farage onto your television programme to create further hatred, division or tension. I mean, it is, I think, that simple, and I wouldn't necessarily have worked that out for myself without the help of you and other callers, Sarah. So once again, happy birthday for Monday, and I hope that David treats you to the slap up feed with all the trimming, Sarah, which is clearly richly deserved on your 81st. And I know an awful lot of people listening to the programme will join me in offering you those congratulations. And how timely as well to talk about the end of the war coinciding with your birthday and your fears of political direction in this country having echoes in the direction that politics took in Germany, as a consequence of which your father lost his life in the service of this country. It's coming up to 11:15. I don't know if I should have hit those marks earlier, saying he does not want Henry's murder to be used to create further hatred, division or tension. It's not hard to... Is that hard for you to understand? Is that hard for anybody to understand? What did you say, Mr. Novak? Please don't use my son's murder to create further hatred, division or tension. What did Alice Gross's family say after she was murdered? Please don't use this as an opportunity to talk about immigration or to turn it into a conversation about immigration. Please don't use my son's murder or my daughter's murder to score cheap and often fallacious political points. I need an investigation into the behaviour of the police when they arrived at the scene. You'd be absolutely mad to be objecting to or opposed to that, but the idea that calling explicitly for the murder not to be used to create further hatred, division or tension. And then, of course, I can turn to my inbox. Not that much, actually, today, to be fair. I can't pretend that it's groaning under the weight of these hideous people who are determined to turn the murder into an opportunity to create further hatred, division or tension. And that's why you have to keep calling it out.
LBC.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Feel that? That little buzz of excitement? That's the weekly flutter. With chances to win up to £10,000, enter British Heart Foundation's lottery for a thrill with goodwill behind it. Because when you play, it helps fund life-saving research. So go on. Keep playing. Keep winning. Keep us beating. Search BHF Lottery. Gamble responsibly. Over 18s only. T's and C's apply. Please see our website for more details. British Heart Foundation is a registered charity.
Here's a tale of two commuters. Steve was in a rush and needed to park near the station. Jane also needed a space and booked in advance with Your Parking Space. Steve had a meeting at 9 and panic at 8. Nowhere to park. Jane, she's already in the office and enjoying that morning latte. With Your Parking Space, you can browse thousands of spaces across London and reserve one instantly. Use the code GET10 for £10 off your first booking. Download the Your Parking Space app today.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
17 minutes after 11 is the time. Please get an authoritative voice on, like Cop Neil Basu, to ask about practice or similar levels similar level police officer, writes Rebecca from Stratford. Well, Rebecca from Stratford, your wish is my command. Neil Basu, former assistant commissioner at the Metropolitan Police and latterly co-host of our podcast here at Global, The Crime Agents, joins me now. Do I need to ask you a question, or do you just want to speak, as my callers have done this morning, from the hip, as it were?
Well, morning, James. Thanks for inviting me on. I've turned down probably 20 media interviews for the sake of the family. So I caught the last interview you had. I've heard what the family have said. They're absolutely right. I mean, the fact that such a horrific incident where they will be grieving beyond measure, probably for the rest of their lives, should be turned into a political moment has been the worst thing I've heard last night and today. I couldn't bring myself to come on initially, yeah. And then I was sent by your producer Nigel Farage's emergency address, and I thought, that cannot be allowed to stand. I'm surprised no current serving chief constable has come on to address that kind of language, because it is inflammatory, it is extremist, it is divisive, it's everything the family didn't want. I'm sure the family are reacting to it as well. This is not the time for that kind of language. And as you've quite rightly said, the officers who were involved in this made what everyone can see on the body-worn camera, and with hindsight, a catastrophic error of judgment. What will have happened to them in the first 24 hours is their professional standards unit will have informed the Independent Office of Police complaints. They will have been reported and they will be being held to account. That will have been paused for the murder investigation and the trial to take place and will now be going ahead. So they will be held to account for the mistakes they've made in responding to this. And those mistakes will live with the family forever as well. It's a terrible thing, but it doesn't justify the commentary that we've heard from every politician, Nigel Farage, Chris Philp. I've heard others talking about it. Nick Thomas Simmons, probably the only balanced view I've heard from a politician in the last 24 hours. Let's have the inquiry. Let's hold the officers to account. They will be expecting that. They know that's happening. Hampshire released the video. But we know who's responsible for this, and the murderer, the monster that he is serving the time that he absolutely deserves. And his own family have said, and let's not make this, in the way we're making these, the actions of these police officers, somehow the actions of policing as a profession, we shouldn't be making the actions of one Sikh boy the actions of the Sikh community. And language that has been used by people like Farage, yet again, he did this up following Southport, he's doing it again. He's doing it for political points. It's extreme language. It's really not going to help.
And is it? I mean,
situation in this society today.
I mean, I follow these things quite closely, as you do, and even I've been somewhat taken aback by the new grift that being white somehow makes you less likely to receive full and fair policing. That this phrase two-tier policing, which is simultaneously meaningless and hideous, is gaining traction, which, of course, partly explains why people start lobbing bricks at police officers when they turn up for the latest round of the Farage riots.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really care whether you're right or left or centrist or liberal. I mean, undermining policing, the criminal justice system, in this way is a ridiculous thing for a politician who wants to govern the country, all of the country, presumably, not just the people he likes. It's a ridiculous thing to do. And he's returning to an old trope that they've used before in terms of two-tier policing. I mean, policing gets things wrong every day, but it also gets things right every day. And as Nick Thompson said this morning, you know, many thousands of them marching towards danger on our behalf every day, doing the best that they can, putting themselves on the line, do not need to be traduced by comments like two-tier policing. And of course, it's just factually incorrect. I was a detective for most of my career. There's absolutely no evidence of two-tier policing. You know, if you were a black person or a brown person or any ethnic minority in the country today, you'd be quite surprised to hear that you are currently being favoured by the criminal justice system, including law enforcement, over white people. The police force is 90% white, 75% male. It is very unlikely that in the 3 years I've been retired, policing for the first time in its 200 years has become anti-white. I mean,
yes,
just saying that out loud sounds ridiculous.
Well, yeah, well, except until it doesn't, I suppose, and say it loud enough and say it disingenuously enough, and some people will come along with it. Can I ask, I mean, you may not be able to ask these questions, but do things like who made the 999 call matter? If the brother of the murderer made the call claiming that his brother was the victim, would that influence how the police responded in the first instance?
Yeah, I mean, this is the, when I talk about catastrophic errors of judgment, any police officer going to any call has to get as much information or intelligence as they possibly can before they arrive at the call, for their own safety and for their own understanding and to prepare themselves for what they face. What you shouldn't let that do is cloud your judgment and give you one fixed understanding of the situation you're about to face. That does seem to be, and we can see it on the body-worn camera, and fair play to Hampshire Police for releasing that. There was a time when policing just simply would not do that and would not be that transparent. Well, we can see it. Yeah, questions have got to be asked about professional curiosity, about your ability to investigate, for your ability to take both sides of a story and make dynamic decisions as it unfolds in front of you. They clearly made a catastrophic error of judgment.
Would you expect the head of the Met to say something about this? I mean, it's possible that there's an interpretation of pure cold rage that doesn't involve civil disobedience or abuse of police officers or pogroms like the ones that we saw last time Farage responded to a crime committed by somebody with dark skin. Would you expect the head of the Met the commissioner to comment on this? It may work to his favour. It adds to his ludicrous narrative of victimhood.
I wouldn't expect the head of the Met to be commenting on a Hampshire police investigation.
But no, on Farage's words, more so than on the Hampshire activities.
No, the thing with being a senior police officer, as I well know from my time as a senior police officer, is taking on politicians in public, as Sir Mark Rowley found out with Zach Polanski, is a DEFCON 1 moment. You know, police officers should not be politicised in the way that Nigel Farage comments are politicising policing. Mm. Police officers themselves shouldn't go out and talk about politicians' comments in public. Politicians should be held to account by the public who elect them, preferably at the ballot box. But police officers could describe exactly what's happening in this case and say that, you know, and basically, but you know, support the family's view. You know, the family's view is this is not a moment for politics. This is a moment for an investigation and an inquiry to hold poor policing to account. We've seen that many times before. I think we're getting better at that. I think policing is getting more transparent. I think policing is getting better at apologising, and it's getting better at putting itself forward to be held to account by the public it serves. And long may that be the case, and long may that continue. I don't think it helps for senior police officers to come out and take out politicians. I think, unfortunately, that's why they're relying on retired police officers like me to do that. And as I said, this is the single and only interview I'm doing on this. But this is just to say my thoughts are entirely with the family. I've dealt with a lot of grieving victims, families, survivors. I know that it is almost impossible to say anything that will help that family at this time. But, you know, it is possible to make their life worse. And some of these politicians, I think, are doing precisely that.
Good Lord. We're grateful for your time. And this is my final question, prompted actually by your reflections on how much policing has changed in the years since you joined the force, and how things like the service itself releasing the body cam footage would once have been unthinkable. Would you be confident that the IOPC investigation gets to the absolute bottom of this?
Unfortunately, I think the IOPC, like policing itself, has got a long way to go to win back trust and confidence in its competence and its professionalism. But this is, you know, probably the latest and most high-profile case it will have for a very long time. I would hope that the commissioners in charge of it are putting all of the resources into it that they possibly can, because what it must be more than anything is totally professional, totally diligent and totally swift.
Neil Basu, many thanks. Former Assistant Commissioner at the Metropolitan Police and co-host of the rather splendid global podcast, The Crime Agents, which he does with our crime editor, Andy Hughes. And just clarifying a few points there. The video is an unbearable watch. I think it would be very weird to come away from that not feeling quite angry towards, at the very least, profoundly confused towards the police officers, particularly the one who responded to Henry's sort of cries about having been stabbed by saying, "I don't think so, mate." Of course, that is both a natural and a probably inevitable response. And that is why that investigation, as Henry's family have stressed, is absolutely paramount to them. He's also expressed concern that one was allowed to leave the force before she had given an account to the IOPC of what had happened. So as Neil says, there's an awful lot on the plate of the Independent Office for Police Conduct, and you can only hope that they rise to the challenge. But what you have in addition to this horror is what Neil just described, which is the opportunistic attempts to turn it into something that it currently isn't. And I guess it's a bit naive to expect or hope for better in the country that we currently inhabit. I squeeze in one or two more calls. 28 minutes after 11 is the time. Margie is on the Wirral. Margie, what would you like to say?
Hello, yes, good morning, James. I'd like to echo everything you've said this morning and all your callers. in regards to Farage's despicable use of this as a political point scoring agency.
Yes.
What happened was diabolical, and that murderer has got everything he deserves. What I do am concerned about is something that Farage said in his speech, which I don't think people, most people, have picked up on. And that's his statement about how we must get rid of DEI. And I think his whole program is to destabilize this country in general. And he's using racism.
Well, I didn't note that part actually properly, but it does fit in with what I said about the desperation to render all allegations and accusations of racism null and void.
Mm.
So, that would be one of the most obvious consequences of getting rid of diversity, equity and inclusion policies. First and foremost would be women losing rights in the workplace or any sort of hope or ambitions for parity. But second, of course, would be that accusations of racism wouldn't be properly investigated. And that's what he wants. Because, of course, this man lied. This character lied about a racist insult directed at him by Henry Novak. And so what you leap from there, if you are a massive racist, is to claim that all accusations or allegations of racism are somehow bogus as well. And that would be one consequence of getting rid of diversity, equity and inclusion policies.
By getting rid of DEI, not only is he using racism as a platform for that, but it's people seem to think that DEI is all about, and forgive me for saying this, putting a black man in a white man's job.
Yes, they do. They've been encouraged to think that by people like Nigel Farage.
But it's absolutely so much more. It's in relation to, for instance, SEND kids at the moment who are struggling to find suitable education, which the government are doing diabolical things on. It is about disabled people such as myself who are facing accusations of claiming PIP, for instance,
yes.
Which, you know, they're not entitled to. It's women who face maternity leave being removed from them. It's a thousand and one things are included under the scope of DEI, and by using racism as a platform to say, oh, it's all about a black man getting a white man's job, let's get rid of it, it's a complete...
Well, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. You don't, yes. Any protections? Any protections from the sort of majority rule? And listen, I'm a straight, white, non-disabled, heterosexual, middle-class, privately educated man. I win on every front in this country. I am the least discriminated member of society imaginable. But guess who else is a straight, white, non-disabled, privately educated, middle-class man? Yeah, Nigel Farage, the voice of the victims. Victims like me. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
The Attorney General is to review the jail sentence given to the killer of Henry Novak after criticism that it was too lenient. Vikram Digra was jailed yesterday for a minimum of 21 years for the student's murder in Southampton last December. The former SNP chief executive, Peter Murrell, has appeared in court this morning after admitting embezzling £400,000 of party funds. Murrell pleaded guilty last week to taking money over 12 years to buy cars and luxury goods, hiding the spending with false invoices. And the Mayor of London has told LBC that he's now backing calls for a total ban on social media for under-16s. Sir Sadiq Khan says it is the only way to stem the harms happening right now. A consultation on the issue is due to report back in the summer. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for large parts of the UK. The heaviest and most prolonged downpours in southern areas, a high of 21 degrees.
Hear every side of the story. This is LBC.
Your garden is the place to be this summer with help from Chessington Garden Centre. When the sun is out and evenings are bright, we've got everything to make it feel right.
barbecues, pizza ovens, outdoor living too. Everything you need for a summer made for you. Furniture, pergolas, cushions so fine. Fresh garden blooms in every design. Farm shop flavours and butcher's best finds. Everything summer, all under one sign. Visit us in-store or at chessingtongardencentre.co.uk.
Guys, gals and non-binary pals, we're Copperfeel, the UK's only breast cancer awareness charity for young people. We educate people on the signs and symptoms of breast cancer, as when found early, treatments are more effective and survival rates higher. This is your reminder to check your boobs, chest or pecs. Find everything you need to get started, including our digital tool, the self-checkout, at copperfeel.org. You're never too young to start checking. Early detection can save lives. So go on, Copperfeel.
Noticed a change in your hearing? Well, get a hearing check from Specsavers. Oh, not sure where to start? Well, we're very flexible. Book one online, on the phone, on your lunch break, on Saturdays, on the same day if you're lucky. Oh, you only miss the odd word. But what if the odd words you're missing are nice ones like love you, or important ones like duck? Oh, too expensive, is it? All right, we like you. We'll do it for nothing. For free hearing checks, should have gone to Specsavers.
My name's Dame Leslie Regan, consultant gynaecologist and chair of the charity Wellbeing of Women. At Wellbeck London, we don't just treat our patients, we design an entire experience. Across every specialty, we select only those colleagues we would send our own families to. The result? A community of exceptional doctors constantly learning from each other, so you will always see the best doctor for you.
Discover more at wellbeck.com. Wellbeck London. Beyond better healthcare.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It's 25 to 12. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Just a sort of quick word of thanks to you, actually, for holding my hand on days like today. I find some of the conversations that we're compelled to have at the moment almost unbearable. The temptation to ask for a transfer and slide over to Classic FM at 10 o'clock in the morning is sometimes great, because the news is not good, is it? It hasn't been for 10 years. I used to say, with a sort of wry smile and a book deal in my back pocket, it's good for business but bad for the soul. Whereas now I'd give almost anything to see my country return to a place where we weren't giving enormous prominence to people who want pogroms, to people who provoke and incite race riots, to people who take tragedy, ignore the pleas of the grieving families involved in the tragedies, and instead use them to stoke up hatred, division, and all of the other things that Sarah, our soon-to-be 81-year-old caller, identified as being ancient hatreds, because we know where these roads can lead. And it would appear that that knowledge is not in any way worrying some people. But it blooming well worries me. Liz is in Cricklade. Liz, what made you pick up the phone?
Hello, James. Firstly, I want to express my heartfelt condolences to Henry's family.
God, yeah.
I, too, have a Henry who was attacked in 2007 by a group of Asian kids, I mean, and young men. Mm. And I'm very lucky that my Henry survived. He survived 7 blows to his head with a hammer.
Good Lord.
And we too were at the centre of inflammatory racial tension and media attention. And it went on for some time. And it is really what inspired me to get involved in politics after Brexit.
Right.
And people like Nigel Farage tried to call Petra on a very, very dangerous situation. So I, you know, it's horrific. It's horrific and triggering to me to hear this happening, because there's a lot of white people now are listening to Nigel and feeling white is right and that they can go and rage against anyone that isn't white. And that cannot be any more dangerous, because as we see with Henry, when somebody is injured in this type of assault, it doesn't matter what colour your skin is. It doesn't matter where you come from. It doesn't matter what your ethnicity is. Everybody is at risk if tribalism and racism is allowed to build. And you don't know who is going to be the victim. And Nigel Farage is the most irresponsible politician in Britain right now. And, he had potential to do this, but he absolutely is today. And it's sickening to hear him want to pile up this anger and dangerous reality that will unfold because of his words. And we saw it with the poster 10 years ago.
Breaking Point
poster.
He's
done it again today. Exactly. And that's what he wants to achieve. He goes around stoking grievances, trying to get people angry. And the last person and the last people he's thinking about are victims. I'm one of those victims. My family have lived through this. How dare he pull flames on that and bring all of this back for me and my family and others, but also put more families at risk of racial tension and violence, and our poor police officers who have to go and deal with this. We're all humans. We all make mistakes. Let the authorities do what they need to do and assess what went wrong.
And hold them to the highest.
More DEI, not less DEI. My son's attack happened because the school really didn't have any DEI. It was like going back to the 1970s. And that's what Nigel wants. He wants more of this. He wants more families being pushed to the brink. As you can hear, I'm upset.
I know you are, and I understand why. And I've been reading up on what happened to your son Henry, who was 15 when he suffered three skull fractures in an attack by, as you said, a group of Asian youths. And the school was found to have failed to recognise a series of racist incidents prior to his assault. And one thing occurred to me, and I hope I'm not speaking inappropriately, that was in 2007, Liz. And if that was now, then some people would be using your tragedy for hideous political point scoring.
Yeah, but this is what is so awful about it.
Yes.
We, as victims, you go through the most horrendous experience in court. Nothing makes it better. Nothing can make it better. Nothing can undo what was done. And people getting enraged and thinking that because they're white and we need to send everybody back actually makes it worse. So don't do it. Don't listen to Nigel Farage. In fact, he shouldn't be given a platform to come out and say these things. It's inherently dangerous. It's like striking a match in front of a bonfire covered in petrol. The people at risk are the minorities now, because as white people, we're the majority. It's about force.
And when he talks about...
And really, he should be thinking about the family and what they have been through. You know, they're in the early stages of grief. And I can't tell you how awful the criminal justice system is. I lived through it 3 months of being in and listening to, which is unthinkable for most people. You have no idea what it's like to be a victim. It's horrendous. My heart goes out to his family. That is what the focus should be. We should be thinking of helping that family, and we should be thinking about making sure our communities are safer. And we really need to guard against and go around our communities, go to Sikh temples, work with your communities, integrate, help build our towns and cities and countryside to be safer. Don't allow Nigel to use hatred to create war, because that's what it does.
And I mean, these are incredibly powerful words, particularly given your personal experience. But I just want to clarify on why you talk about diversity, equality and inclusion. It's because the school that your son attended and where he was attacked had not properly dealt with an influx of British Asian pupils and tensions between them and white pupils, which is precisely the sort of programming and educational processes that a decent DEI policy in a school would have had in place. So the school would have been able to work better in addressing, the summary at the time, the racist behaviour of some white pupils, as well as the events that led up to the attack upon your son. It is precisely DEI policies that would engender harmony and peace in schools like your son Henry's.
Yes, because we don't know why Henry Doak's murderer felt he needed to have knives.
No.
What had he gone through? What had gone wrong for that to happen? If it had been a white-on-white attack, Would Nigel Farage be standing up now and saying what he's saying?
Don't be ridiculous, Liz.
So I thought about this with the boys that attacked my son.
Yes.
They're children of other parents, they're other families. It cost Wiltshire, Swindon, millions of pounds, my my son's attack. And it you know, the ripples went through several families as well, and the damage is still there today. Those kids that attacked my son are still their parents now.
Mm.
So these things are not sort of like, oh, we'll shove someone in a jail and it'll get better. It doesn't work like that. It's just, that's just the red meat that's put through the sun. Yeah. And the, you know, the various people go, oh, let's get everyone enraged for the day. Go, oh, yeah, we're right because we're white and we'll send them all home. It isn't simple.
Thank you.
Really, it needs to be understood. And we should be going out today and we should be thinking of the Nowak family first. But we should also think about the parents of the murderer and the family there. And we should be thinking about the ethnic minorities who will be terrified. You know, you have violent incidents. We've had it in Swindon where the Sikh temple has been set on fire more than once. That's where my thoughts are. Go outside. Please support your community. Hold hands with people. It doesn't matter what colour your skin is. It doesn't matter where you come from. If someone sticks a knife in you, you die. If you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, you are at risk of dying if these tensions are allowed to build up. So please, today, of all days, listen to me and let's love each other, not hate each other.
Thank you. I mean, thank you, really, is all I can say, except just to inquire after Henry and just to wonder how he's getting on these days.
James, I feel very guilty to say this because I'm very mindful of the Nowak family. Yes. I'm very, very lucky and I feel enormously guilty. My son is happy and living well and he's about to have his second child and we are... Every day of my life, I wake up and I understand how lucky we are. And I send my absolute love and heartfelt thoughts to the Nowak family. And if they want to get in touch with me, I'm here. I'm happy to help.
Thank you, Liz. Liz Webster there, who has obviously been on this programme many times in her guise as a doughty defender of farmers and farming in the aftermath of Brexit, but sharing there a personal story that speaks, I mean, unbearably directly to the experiences of the Nowak family right now. And, of course, the decision by one politician to completely ignore this grieving father's plea.
But justice alone is not enough. We want to use Henry's heartbreaking story to make change for the better. We do not want his death to be used to create further division, hatred or tension. We want his story to make our streets safer for everyone. That is why we are calling on the government to treat knife crime as the national emergency that it is.
11:46 is the time.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
That tragedy that played out in Southampton, the appalling treatment of the student who was murdered, and of course the aftermath of investigations being conducted by the IOPC into Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary. And Nigel Farage joins me now.
This is two-tier policing. The police treated accusations of a racial slur more seriously than murder. Can you believe where we are?
Let's get straight to your reaction.
It was like they'd acted as judge, jury and executioner.
I was shouting at the video. It just made me so angry. It should never have happened.
His murder was absolutely evil. He absolutely did play the race card. But equally, I think if that police officer is using that as an excuse, then so have they. They are playing the race card too.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
They say go big or go home. But now you can go big at home with the Big Arch on delivery. When you're hungry for something big, like really big. Big Arch for big McDonald's hunger. Order on the McDonald's app. Served from 11 a.m. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery orders. Subject to availability. Price and participation may vary.
For unbeatable prices on printer ink and toner, more people are switching to cartridgepeople.com. Like Max, whose kids have discovered printable colouring sheets. And now, there's no going back. And Jen, a business owner who wants printer cartridges so economical, she can print herself a pay rise. For unbeatable prices on printer ink and toner, switch to cartridgepeople.com. T's and C's apply. See online for our price promise.
Feel that? That little buzz of excitement? That's the weekly flutter. With chances to win up to £10,000, enter British Heart Foundation's lottery for a thrill with goodwill behind it. Because when you play, it helps fund life-saving research. So go on, keep playing, keep winning, keep us beating. Search BHF Lottery. Gamble responsibly, over 18s only. T's and C's apply. Please see our website for more details. British Heart Foundation is a registered charity.
Here's a tale of two commuters. Steve was in a rush and needed to park near the station. Jane also needed a space and booked in advance with Your Parking Space. Steve had a meeting at 9 and panic at 8. Nowhere to park. Jane, she's already in the office and enjoying that morning latte. With Your Parking Space, you can browse thousands of spaces across London and reserve one instantly. Use the code GET10 for £10 off your first booking. Download the Your Parking Space app today.
Ready for a new kitchen? Wix Kitchen Experts can support you with clever designs and a professional installation. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
James O'Brien on LBC. Text 84850.
It's 11:49. You are indeed listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where the words of Peter Novak resonate through all of the conversation that we've had this morning, and his, it turns out, somewhat futile plea for people to resist any temptation to turn his son's murder into an opportunity for division or hatred or worse, and no prizes for guessing who has ignored him most publicly and most shamefully. 10 to 12 is the time. Ravi is in Slough. Ravi, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi, James. Yeah, hi. First of all, I'm a Sikh myself. And deepest condolences. It was such a dignified response from the father. It makes me proud to be where I am in this country, that yes, we have people like this gentleman whose son was brutally murdered, and yet so much dignity and dignification in the way he presented himself. And Nigel Farage, I mean, he's divided the country, he's divided Europe, he's divided communities. He sits back, but he likes to match his millionaire lifestyle. And my appeal today is to everyone listening to Nigel Farage. This is not a leader we want. We don't want a leader that divides communities, undermines the country when we are struggling from crime, from economic damage, everything. You name it, we're struggling from it. And this is not a leadership. And Nigel Farage has all been a vile snake, and I'm ashamed of my fellow Sikhs that will ever join parties like that or any Asian, because this guy has used this opportunity when the father of Henry has spoken so well, so much compassion and passion for his community, for his country, for that he doesn't want a race to be a related issue. You know, he wants the police to be brought to book, and like we all do, I think we, you know, it's terrible what happened. It's horrible to hear. And people like Farage are using every opportunity. Imagine him being our so-called leader in this country, who admires Ina Powell, who admires Trump, who admires people who are absolute vile, creating genocides and wanting genocides. This is not an answer. This is not to divide the whites from the browns and the blacks. This is, we need unity in a time of a need in our country when statesmanship is required, not politicians. Politicians like Nigel Farage will use every opportunity because they have no soul. They have no real love for the country. Which other person, individual politician, would light a match and throw at the country to burn and ask and call for violence and call for community to go against each other, you know, cause riots and mayhem? No politician, no potential leader would ever do that.
Wow. I mean, I obviously agree with you, and I'd stress again, feeling absolute fury towards the perpetrator of this crime is
absolutely
not only justified, but probably healthy, although some people have deeper reserves of compassion and charity than I do. I'd personally throw away the metaphorical key, but it's the conflation, isn't it? It's the leap from the hideous actions of one person, aided and abetted by his mother, to the attempts to sort of turn it into a narrative of victimhood for white people and an attack upon all, essentially, brown people. That's where the narrative of immigration, his narrative of immigration, takes us. Can what is, because I've been meaning to dig into this a bit, personally. What is it about Sikhism that, why do I see turbans on some of Tommy Robinson's marches and Sikhs quite well represented sometimes in Nigel Farage's ranks, when to an outsider possessed of reserves of white privilege, it's obvious to me that just because they're going mostly after Muslims today, it doesn't mean they won't go after Sikhs tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, can I answer that?
Yeah, that's why I asked.
Okay, I can tell you straight away. I wasn't sure if I'm so long, sorry.
Yeah, you are.
Most of the, it's a minority of the Sikhs, and those who join Nigel Farage are Islamophobes.
Right.
Islamophobes.
So I mean, my enemy's enemy is anybody, my friend.
So basically, we as Sikhs stand with anybody who's struggling. It doesn't matter. We stand with our brothers, Muslim brothers and sisters, when they've been targeted for the last several years. And especially when they raise the issue for Gaza, they get arrested, they get pushed, they get prosecuted. And that is a targeting Muslim communities. And those same Sikhs now who are on the far right have very hard time to defend when now we will be targeted. And it's like you said, you know, they came for them, then they come for us. But we somehow have a lost few people in our community who joined the far right to express their Islamophobia. Right. That's all it is.
It's that simple.
We as Sikhs, majority of the Sikhs I know, I work around the world in refugee camps. We work in Britain in disasters. We get along with everyone. We do not judge people by their race, faith, religion. I have nothing but respect for any faith. And I feel so sad when my Muslim brothers and sisters are protesting about Gaza. And suddenly every right-wing press or individual labels them terrorists. And now it's our turn to be labeled. And this is what I want people who have joined Tommy Robinson and Farage to come out and walk away in solidarity for the country, to make the country great again. We need solidarity. Solidarity needs to come from every quarter, including us. So it is not a one community against the other. It's this ideology that people are following. It's not a Sikh or Khalsa ideology. It's a racist ideology.
And it's not enough to hope that other people will fight, that other people will resist it. You I mean, it's not enough to hope that it burns itself out or...
No. We need to be actively all involved, all the leadership from all communities. Sometimes we just talk the talk. We don't walk it. We need to understand, challenge the hate. This is why it's not a black, white, yellow thing. This is a country that's always welcomed people from or outside, immigrants, immigration. We're built on immigration. Is not the type now. When I was shocked when Nigel Farage this morning talked about the murder in like a black and white way. Then yes. He went turned on immigration.
Yeah.
And then he started blaming immigration in the same sentence. I mean, how does that happen? So he's waiting for something to happen.
You know how it happens. But of course, what it does to some of the people that you've talked about who have allowed their hatred of Islam to blind them to the activities of some people who hate them, it's that old line that comes up quite a lot on the program. Well, I don't mean you. So if I'm a Sikh going along to one of Stephen Yaxley Lennon's hate fests or signing up for one of Nigel Farage's many political parties, I'm hearing, oh, I don't mean you. When I talk about immigration or when I talk about Asian people or when I talk about brown skinned people, I don't mean you. You're all right. And then on a day like today, that plaster gets torn off, doesn't it? And he may go back tomorrow to... Oh, no, I don't mean you, Ravi. You're all right. Yeah, I mean them, exactly. but actually, they always mean you. Of course they mean
James,
you.
James, I worked in a factory as a school kid to earn some money. I remember that's raw racism, right? And this lady would pick on me so much. And another guy, racist guy, so mild racism, he would even stop her saying stop. It was so raw. I never thought we're going back that time. I'm 56 now, and we're going backwards in this country. It is a responsibility of every individual to challenge people like Farage, or we'll never be great again.
What's the name of the organization you do your good work with?
Oh, it's a Khalsa Aid.
You know, you're famous, man. Paul just messaged to say, oh my God, it's Ravi from Khalsa Aid. What a privilege to listen to.
We work with refugees from now. We're working in Lebanon. We work in Syrian refugees. We got aid into Gaza. We work in Africa for the water bomb, working in Punjab for the floods. We work in the UK for the flood, Somerset, Yorkshire in the last few years. We believe everyone's a human being, no matter who you are. We judge you by your action, not by your race, religion. And Khalsa Aid is an organization that's funded by every sort of like Sikh in the community almost, and every woman non-Sikhs as well. We just get on with the work. But I do believe my work 50% is talking about how we can all get along together, especially now in Gaza. I talk openly about what's going on. You get cancelled in places, you don't get cancelled. But if you don't talk about places like Gaza or oppression, we're not Sikhs. We have to also address anywhere there's oppression, injustice, we speak up. Our turbans are unique for that reason. That's why we're ashamed of people like Vikram who stabbed this guy, unarmed 18-year-old innocent lad, and watched and lied to the police those 3 minutes while he's being handcuffed and dying. And that is the most cowardly way for any. So brings shame on us. There's no warriorism in that. There's no compassion in that. That guy is an individual, doesn't represent us. He represents a form of ideology or thought process which is far from the Sikhs.
And you're too modest to mention that you got a Nobel Peace Prize nomination in 2021.
Oh, thank you very much.
Don't tell Donald, whatever you do, Ravi.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Could you imagine
going over?
Ravi
Singh.
We can
talk more one day.
I would really like that, and I will make sure that it happens, Ravi.
Thank you, James.
It is, as Paul said, a privilege to listen to you, actually, and a message that is pretty close to urgent at the moment, coming from the very, very heart of the Sikh community. Ravinder Singh there, the founder and CEO of Khalsa Aid International. I think... sharing truths on a level that we're quite privileged to have witnessed. In fact, quite a few callers today. Liz Webster talking about her son, Henry, being attacked back in 2007 in an atmosphere of racism by Asian students at the school he attended, reminding us that events like that become less likely to happen when you have diversity, equality and inclusion policies in place. Listening to Sarah, who celebrates her 81st birthday on Monday, talking about losing her father, the father she never met because he died a month before the end of the Second World War as a pilot, and she was born a month later, and reminding us that the path to the places that were visited in 1930s and 1940s Germany is extremely well trodden.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, the Attorney General's office says it's considering requests to review the sentence given to the killer of Henry Novak after criticism it was too lenient. Vikram Digwa was jailed for life yesterday with a minimum sentence of 21 years for Henry's murder in Southampton last year. Reform UK has accused Hampshire Police of a two-tier culture after it emerged that Henry was handcuffed after Digwa lied to officers claiming that he'd been racially abused. Former Metropolitan Police Assistant Commissioner Neil Basu has told James O'Brien such language risks deepening community divisions.
It is divisive. It's everything the family didn't want. I'm sure the family are reacting to it as well. This is not the time for that kind of language. And as you've quite rightly said, the officers who were involved in this made what everyone can see on the body-worn camera and with hindsight a catastrophic error of judgment.
Hampshire Police has apologised for initially handcuffing Henry Novak and has referred itself to the police watchdog. The former SNP chief executive Peter Murrell has appeared in court this morning after admitting embezzling £400,000 of party funds. Murrell pleaded guilty last week to taking money over 12 years to buy cars and luxury goods, hiding the spending with false invoices. The 61-year-old, who is the estranged husband of former Scotland First Minister Nicola Sturgeon, will be sentenced later this month. Data shared exclusively with LBC shows that 1 in 8 children globally are affected by online sexual abuse every year. The National Crime Agency, which is behind the research, says the figures point to a growing crisis. It says organised criminal networks are monetising child abuse material at an unprecedented scale. Former National Police Chiefs Council head Simon Bailey has spoken to LBC.
The tech companies don't have the silver bullet. They can't completely resolve it, but the tech companies, I believe, can do more than anybody else to prevent crimes. The technology exists with the providers of devices that you can stop children accessing nude images, children sending nude images, and tech can do so much more.
Separately, the Mayor of London has told LBC that he's now backing calls for a total ban on social media for under-16s. Sir Sadiq Khan, who's due to give a speech later, says it's the only way to stem the harms happening right now. A consultation on the issue is due to report back in the summer. You can read more on both of these stories on the LBC app. And Transport for London says it is bitterly disappointing that the RMT union decided to go ahead with two more tube strikes. The first is underway and is continuing until midnight. The second is on Thursday. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 36 points at 10,374. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for large parts of the UK throughout the afternoon. The heaviest and most prolonged downpours in southern areas, a high of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling and the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
4 minutes after 12 is the time. This is a little bit too good to be true. Would you like a quick missing word round? It picks up on a theme that is dominating my inbox this morning, but I wonder if you can work out what the missing word actually is. Too much time with blank. Too much time with blank can put your mental health at risk. What could that be? Too much, it's a plural, so too much time with blanks can put your mental health at risk. What might that be? And listening to the news bulletin there and Sadiq Khan's a change of mind, I think, on the social media ban for under-16s, I should tell you that we're having an event tomorrow at the O2. Not that one. So I play the O2 regularly, but not that one. There's a little room around the corner. Is it called the Indigo, the O2 Indigo? It's a smaller, much, much, much smaller. One day I'll play. I think I went on stage at the Big O2 once with an adoption charity, but for some reason it's lost in the mists of my memory. Anyway, we have a sort of annual audit of the Mayor of London and his team at the O2, and it is tomorrow night. So if you want to come along to that or get a question asked or submit, then head over to the LBC website where you will be able to find more details. Really nice to end that conversation with Ravi. Clearly a force for good. I'm just reading up about him. His good works are so widely recognised. He even turned up on Surprise Surprise with Cilla Black to get a new car and holiday as a mark of gratitude for work that his charity did during the floods in Somerset some years ago. So, I mean, certainly keen to talk to him more, and quite possibly, as a lot of you have suggested, getting him on Full Disclosure, even. He's certainly got an incredible story to tell. My guest on Full Disclosure this week is Russell T. Davies, who has written an extraordinary new drama that premiered on Sunday night and indeed last night on Channel 4 called Tiptoe, which I can't recommend highly enough if you want to have a sort of companion piece to the conversations that we've been having all morning in a dramatic sense, turning those tides of hatred that Sarah identified and Liz warned about and Ravi works to fight against, turning those tides of hatred into drama, as only a writer of the quality of Russell T. Davies can do. I heartily recommend that as well. Change of pace now. And Simon Marks will be with us this hour for an update on all manner of matters American. The Trump juggernaut has been out of control for years, but we still have to try to keep track of the damage that it does as it careers all over the metaphorical highway. But here's a headline that you won't be seeing in many newspapers today. Speaking of which, should we just take a minute to see what page the Daily Mail put the story about the Rwanda money not being payable to the Rwandan government? 700 million quid, the governments that the Daily Mail helped to install, wasted on a scheme that was that saw precisely no, but it makes Boris Johnson's bridge over the River Thames look like a bargain, doesn't it? Tens of millions of pounds spent there without a single brick ever being laid. Hundreds of millions of pounds spent by the Daily Mail's favourite politicians, two of whom currently have columns in the newspaper, without a single person ever be, a single failed asylum seeker ever being removed from the country. And the thing they got very excited about was the idea that the Labour government would have to pay £100 million to get itself out of the deal that the previous Conservative governments had signed. So I told you it wouldn't be on the front page, and I was right. And it's not on page two either. It would be on page one if it had gone the other way. You can be absolutely certain of that. Story about quiche on page three. On page five, we've got that hideous example of incitement, I suppose, when they have inserted the word Sikh into the words of Henry Novak's father, who did not use the word Sikh. In fact, I can't. I probably should have gone in harder than that, shouldn't we? I can't believe that. Get that clip ready again, would you? Let's just play that clip again of Peter Novak talking about what he wants to happen next in this case, and focus on the middle bit of these comments, because they're the important bit.
But justice alone is not enough. We want to use Henry's heartbreaking story to make change for the better. We do not want his death to be used to create further division, hatred or tension. We want his story to make our streets safer for everyone. That is why we are calling on the government to treat knife crime as the national emergency that it is.
So, with those words ringing in their ears, some people at the Daily Mail yesterday decided to insert the word Sikh into Peter Novak's comments. Police dragged our son across gravel, handcuffed him and left him to die, then treated his Sikh murderer with decency, which is not a word that Peter Novak, Mark Novak used. And you wouldn't expect him to either, would you? Because he has made it clear that he doesn't want his son's murder to be used to spread division, hatred or tension. So that's page five. Page six and seven are the Mandelson files, which were a bit of a wet blanket in the end, unfortunately. I was quite looking forward to getting stuck into those, but we'd seen it all before. Page 10, there you go. No payout to Rwanda. So it just gets a couple of paragraphs on the left-hand facing page on page 10 of the Daily Mail, when it would be all over page 1 if the story had gone the other way. I want you to talk to me next about net zero, because here's another story that you won't be seeing in the newspapers anytime soon. More than a million jobs, higher wages, nearly half a trillion pounds in investment in the pipeline, and the UK's green economy is powering ahead, according to research by the country's leading business organisation. The net zero economy, which is worth more than £100 billion a year, benefits all of the UK. Well, what sort of lefty, sandal-wearing, muesli-munching, armpair-hair-knitting, eco-warrior, environmentalist, just-stop-oil, ludicrous, rose-tinted fool has come out with this stuff? It's the CBI. It's CBI Economics. It's the country's leading business organisation, who've undertaken analysis commissioned by the Energy and Climate Intelligence Unit think tank. I'm going to say that again because, listen, I do this for a living and I didn't know this. I mean, I don't think that's an embarrassing admission because obviously they didn't know it either. But there are more than a million jobs, higher wages and nearly half a trillion pounds in investment in the pipeline as the UK's green economy powers ahead. This, I stress, according to the CBI. Net zero workers enjoy higher wages. I don't know if that's going to help, lads. About 11% higher than the national average of £39,000. The chief economist for the CBI said clean power and decarbonisation are already a significant and growing part of the UK's industrial base. Across energy, manufacturing, services and supply chains, the UK has the expertise to build on this strength and capture even greater commercial opportunities. There's about £455 billion of potential investment in energy infrastructure in the pipeline, according to the same research. And the government's target of decarbonising the UK's electricity by 2030 has spurred all of these developments. This alongside the determination, or at least the ambition, to reach net zero, to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the near term to net zero by 2050. There's more, right? Each worker in the net zero economy generates nearly £120,000 a year for the wider economy. That's about 1.5 times the national average for adding value at a time when the UK is struggling with low productivity. And there are currently about 22,000 small businesses around the UK engaged in activities based on the push to cut greenhouse gas emissions and boost renewable energy, according to the report. So listen, net zero is Brexit 2.0. About that, you should have absolutely no doubt. People who almost revel in their ignorance, a strength of opinion coupled with an absolute absence of knowledge and understanding, but for reasons that are still quite hard to work out, remain perceived in the British media as an equal and opposite force to the people who know exactly what they're talking about and base all of their opinions on evidence and knowledge, evidence and facts. You saw it with Brexit on an almost unbelievable scale. You are seeing it again with net zero. And listen, this isn't even a right-left divide, although I suppose describing Tony Blair as left-wing these days, even vaguely, is going to take a bit of a leap. But Tony Blair also attacking net zero and Ed Miliband while bigging up AI and taking hundreds of millions of dollars a year from a bloke whose fortune is in part built upon his investments in AI. It's just an extraordinary coincidence, just like the 5 million quid turning up secretly in Nigel Farage's current account shortly before he announced that he would introduce policies as Prime Minister that would make crypto billionaires or stablecoin billionaires even richer than they are already. So here's what I want you to tell me. I don't know enough about this. And that is a recurring theme when we turn our attentions to matters environmental. I want to know how we stop net zero becoming Brexit 2.0. 0345 6060 973. What is, why? And actually, let's dig into the weeds of it. Let's start a little bit earlier. Why is net zero so, I'm going to use that dreadful word, and I hope that, well, I know that it doesn't matter in this context of this conversation. Why is it so divisive? I played you some clips of Richard Tice yesterday, who is one of Nigel Farage's donors, rewarded with a job in the party. They all are, really. I think that Zia Yusuf is a donor as well. Did you have to give, I mean, 30p's probably not got much cash to donate to the party, has he? But anyway, you give money to the party. Not to Farage himself, that's just the secret billionaire arrangement. But you give some money to the party, you get a job. It seems like a perfectly transparent operation to me. And Tice is one of the great people to speak out against net zero, despite advertising on a frankly industrial scale that he understands absolutely nothing about it. So that's my question to you. How do we stop net zero? Why would we not celebrate such good news? If you know more about this subject than I do, which I'm not going to lie to you, wouldn't be hard, what are the most frustrating elements of this conversation, the most frustrating elements of this debate? Why would we not celebrate a growing green economy that's worth more than £100 billion a year and currently benefits the entire country and accounts for more than a million jobs? It's genuinely boggling, mind-boggling, right? £100 billion a year, more than a million jobs, driving growth at a greater rate than any other sector, and good for the entire country. How do we stop them, the usual suspects, turning net zero into another Brexit, i.e. persuading a population to use its political power to vote against its own interests and instead in the interests of wealth? That's the question I've got for you. So it's in three parts. Number one, why is this not being celebrated more? 0345 6060 973. Why do you think the subject is in danger of becoming another Brexit? Why is net zero in danger of becoming another Brexit? I'll take any answer you've got to that question. And then, crucially, how do we stop it from happening? How do we stop net zero from being turned into another example by the same people of how to persuade ordinary people to vote against their own interests in the protection of wealth. In this case, wealth that is derived almost exclusively from fossil fuels. There's something very Project Fear about the desire for oil and gas. So I want your answers to all or any of those questions on 0345 6060 973.
LBC. At the third stroke, the time from BT will be 6 o'clock, precisely.
Today in the UK, 850 small businesses will make their first sale. 1,300 homes will be connected to full fibre broadband. 100,000 calls for help will be answered.
999 service.
4 million cyber threats will be prevented. And countless messages will say, good night, love.
At the third stroke, the time from BT will be brilliant.
BT, behind brilliant things. Data includes BT Group customers.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had 2 kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Is your cat drinking enough? Discover Purina One Hydralife and help support their daily hydration with a taste they'll enjoy. Purina One Hydralife. Make it easy.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Proud partner of Team GB.
It is 19 minutes after 12 and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where it is, I mean, to me at least, as someone who still marvels at the idiocy of Brexit, it's extraordinary to me that it's almost exactly the same people deploying almost exactly the same arguments to attack net zero. And listen, forgive the pun, but it's not a zero-sum game. There might be some things being done in the name of environmentalism that are less than perfect or shouldn't be done at all. Just as the European Union is not a perfect institution and some of the things that it did or some of the things done in its name would have been better had they not been done at all. So letting the perfect be the enemy of the good, or the idea that there is nothing to criticise about net zero, or indeed about the European Union, and focus instead upon the obvious benefits of a policy that would reduce our dependency on fossil fuels and replace it with a dependency on stuff that's really, really cheap. Once you've done the spending and the investing in the infrastructure, the waves, the wind, the sun, they don't have to get dug out of the ground, and you don't have to pay a massive premium to whoever's digging them out of the ground every time you want to use them. In fact, Chris put it rather brilliantly in a message that I've already lost. Here it is. No, Charlie, not Chris. Net zero keeps money in my pocket rather than transferring it to billionaires. So there will be some simplistic answers to these questions, but I also want the informed ones, the slightly more complicated ones, the ones that elude me, because I can't add a fourth question to the list, which would be something along the lines of, why does a relatively well-informed and engaged individual like me not feel the net zero story in the way that I feel other stories? Were we the same with Brexit? Were we exactly the same with Brexit? Did we not realise what a disaster that we were storing up until it was too late? Or we were powerless in the face of people telling lies or people misrepresenting the facts, and it was only when the tide went out that you got to see who had their trunks on? All of the claims about laws that we have to obey or money that we would somehow save or profit from. And it was only after we had allowed ourselves to be persuaded that leaving would be a good idea that we began to see in full technicolor and crystal clarity what a ludicrous idea it was. So we call off net zero, or we allow politicians who are going to cancel net zero, ignore the fact that it currently funds 1 million jobs with higher than average wages and is expecting nearly £500 billion in investment in a country that's desperate for growth. Every job in the sector creates about 50% more growth than a job in any other sector. We allow the same vandals and arsonists to torch net zero, and only 50 years down the line do we realise what a terrible mistake that we've made. Why? Why is it being turned into another football? How do we stop it from becoming another Brexit? And if you follow this stuff more closely than I do, what am I missing? What is it? What is actually going on that explains why a story of unalloyed good news is not on every front page and being celebrated from here to kingdom come? Ross is in Battersea. Ross, what would you like to say?
Afternoon, James. Hope you're doing well.
I'm very well, mate. What's on your mind?
I think the biggest thing with net zero is that people in places like where I'm from, Doncaster and Sheffield and Rotherham, don't feel like it's going to benefit them. They feel like it's going to be something that will, you know, give someone living in Surrey a nice solar plant, and it'll be all lovely for them.
The people in Surrey, I sort of jumped to interrupt you before you've even drawn breath, the people in Surrey never stop complaining about the possibility of solar farms being planted on their doorsteps, but that's a detail. Tell me more about how something that is designed to make energy much, much cheaper wouldn't resonate in areas that you describe. How can it not?
I think it's definitely, it was the biggest mistake in my life because I bought that set.
Oh boy, the phone line's gone funny. No, I'm just going to try and sort your phone line out. We'll get back to you shortly, I promise. But he's right, actually. It's all very well me picking holes in his theory, but obviously, people who are going to benefit from net zero are persuaded that it's not. Is it a class thing that it's not for them? It's all sort of middle class muesli munchers who get exercised and excited about this sort of thing, and therefore, when populist politicians come along with their snake oil and their lies, they're going to be able to persuade people to act against their own interests, just as they did in the run up to the Brexit referendum. I mean, is it? I mean, maybe it's a really easy question to answer, and the tactics are absolutely identical. But these jobs are not going to be confined to the southeast. These jobs are not going to be confined to, far from it, in fact, are going to be confined to the people that Ross is talking about. Why are the benefits not more widely understood and widely advertised? Gurnam's in Manchester. Gurnam, what would you like to say?
I'm no expert.
Nor am I, mate. You're in good company.
So I was just thinking that there's some fantastic stuff that British universities are doing now around research around net zero and green technology. And there's so much work, for example, the adaptation of existing houses to make them more energy efficient. So there must be some work there if we can convert that issue problem to an industrial strategy. There's some fantastic work that Rolls-Royce, a British company, has done around modular nuclear reactors. And I always thought about, you know, if you can make a nuclear put a nuclear reactor on a submarine, why can't you do it to a small town or a medium-sized town? And things like that being done, but there's not enough talk about it, and there's not enough translation from that to actually having, you know, the first or the second or the third nuclear reactor. And if I've got a complaint, and I'll come on to why we don't celebrate, if I've got a complaint with Labour, I'd say they're not linking all of that to a properly well-thought-out, policy-driven industrial strategy that ties it with college training and apprenticeship.
Well, I think they are, you see. I mean, maybe not the second bit, but this is a massive success story, Gurnam, and you and I are both talking about it as if it's a missed opportunity. More than a million jobs. Go on, count them. More than a million jobs, higher wages, nearly half a trillion pounds in investment in the pipeline, and your average British punter is going to think either that it's all a bit of hot air signifying nothing, or that it's not something that they should be interested in or celebrating.
I'm not arguing it's a missed opportunity. I'm worried it become more of a missed opportunity. I absolutely accept what you say. Now, here's my problem with, if you like, the British public.
How long have you got?
Right. No, well, it's going to be quick. We love the fact that we revel in the fact that we don't know anything sometimes.
Do you think so?
Yeah, and we just buy any old rubbish.
So you get a drill baby drill type line, which could be a slogan from wrestling, and it excuses people from the business of thinking.
But yes, and you can get snake oil from the great snake oil charmer himself, Farage.
Yeah, or Trump.
And you will buy that rubbish all day long. With Brexit, and very quickly linking it to that, there was so much rubbish that was given out, and then afterwards people went, oh, we were lied to. Nobody took the, you know, these guys that voted, and I was, hands up, Remainer. And that's the other thing. I mean, the thing, again, one of the reasons I was Remain strongly was because if we were going to start building electric, or if we were going to start importing lots of electric cars, why not have something that we could bring to places like Sunderland and other places where we would assemble? At least that would still mean work. You know, so it's just got to drive the process harder and make sure that Britain gets something out of it, rather than, you know, trash it all.
But they are. I mean, this is, you're speaking at slightly cross purposes, because the message that the people should be getting is that 308,000 people are employed directly in businesses such as solar panel installation, home insulation, wind turbine manufacturing and electric vehicles. Your average consumer of British media is not going to believe that 1.1 million jobs depend upon the net zero policies that Ed Miliband and others have introduced. Or not introduced, they've been around a while. Even Boris Johnson was pro-net zero. So what are the biggest obstacles? I mean, the obvious answer is that money is going to be transferred from the pockets of the super rich into the rest of us. But what are the what are the biggest obstacles to spreading the word?
Yeah, with Johnson, he was a bit, didn't he say a wind turbine couldn't blow the something off a rice pudding or so, the skin off a rice pudding or something. Yes. You know, he was always a flip-flopper. But I agree. Nobody's looking at the fact that the people that are shouting this net zero, net stupid rubbish are funded and have a vested interest. Maybe it's to do with communication. I don't have an answer. I apologise.
You don't have to apologise.
Why we can't get that message across?
That's what we're doing. That's what we're having a conversation about. So I can sit here and shout the odds. The Guardian can report it. Is it worth having a look at to see where else this has even been reported? I suspect the BBC will have done it. But what is the Daily Telegraph going to do with a story, the German-owned Daily Telegraph, going to do with a story that is not only reporting fantastic results for net zero policies, but also pointing the way towards the desirability of having lots more? We got Ross's line fixed in Battersea. So we'll go back to him after the news headlines. I won't squeeze you in to the minute or so that remains. After that, of course, there's plenty of room for you. We've got Simon Marks on standby. He'll be popping in before the end of the programme. And I have, of course, the answer to the missing word round for you as well, which is a little bit close to the bone this morning. I cannot lie. Too much time with blanks can put your mental health at risk. So shall I give you a little clue? Okay. It is relevant, the answer to this missing word round. It's relevant to a lot of the comments in my inbox this morning. A lot of the more measured but still critical comments in my inbox this morning. Too much time with blanks can put your mental health at risk. Don't let me forget to give you the answer to that immediately after the very latest headlines with Matt Hewitt.
The Attorney General will review the jail sentence given to the killer of Henry Novak after criticism it was too lenient. Vikram Digwa was jailed yesterday for a minimum of 21 years for the student's murder in Southampton last December. A court's heard exactly how the former SNP chief executive, Peter Murrell, created fake invoices and made false expense claims to embezzle £400,000 of party funds. He recorded the purchase of a robotic lawnmower as legal fees and two expensive watches as event merchandise. And the Mayor of London has told LBC he's now backing calls for a total ban on social media for under-16s. Sir Sadiq Khan says it's the only way to stem the harms happening right now. LBC weather, scattered heavy showers across the UK, sunny spells mixed in, except for northern Scotland, highs of 12 to 19 degrees.
This is LBC.
Get iPhone 17 in the Vodafone Business Summer Sale. iPhone 17 is built for business, with all-day battery life and the powerful A19 chip for fast, efficient performance. Experience it all on the best network for business and save £300. Hurry, offer ends the 22nd of July. Vodafone Business.
Businesses with up to 9 employees only. Based on iPhone 17 and 24-month unlimited airtime plan. Best network is awarded at the Mobile Industry Awards. Saving calculated over 36 months.
Everything cake at Ocado. We've got birthday cakes, Jaffa cakes, pancakes, fish cakes, rice cakes, oat cakes. Basically, you can have your cake and eat it. As well as non-cakey stuff. At Ocado, the online supermarket. Give us a try and get 25% off the food in your first shop and free delivery. Geographical and other restrictions apply. New customers only. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges apply. Terms at Ocado.com.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Here's a tale of two commuters. Steve was in a rush and needed to park near the station. Jane also needed a space and booked in advance with Your Parking Space. Steve had a meeting at 9 and panic at 8. Nowhere to park. Jane, she's already in the office and enjoying that morning latte. With Your Parking Space, you can browse thousands of spaces across London and reserve one instantly. Use the code GET10 for £10 off your first booking. Download the Your Parking Space app today.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
12:32 is the time. It does appeal to some of the same impulses, but I want to pin down precisely what they are. Why does net zero look like becoming Brexit 2.0, where ordinary people, dreadful phrase, but we are mostly ordinary people, are being persuaded to act against their own interests by malevolent or greedy or just opportunistic players, because guess what? The green economy is worth more than £100 billion a year, funds more than a million jobs, produces higher wages, and is powering growth on a scale that no other sector can claim. So much so that about half a trillion pounds in investment is in the pipeline. So why is it even a political hot potato? 12:33 is the time. Before that, I can answer the missing word round. Are you ready for this? It's quite a good one. I don't think anybody's got it right, although some of you came close. It's definitely not O'Brien's Mikko in Finland on the Turku archipelago. Too much time with O'Brien's can put your mental health at risk. The correct answer, wait for it, is colleagues. Too much time with colleagues can put your mental health at risk. I'm saying nothing. Back to Ross, who's in Battersea, to steer us back to the net zero question and the fact that for people, I mean, I don't think you necessarily need a geographical depiction, but that's where you went, people in Doncaster and, shall we say, post-industrial areas don't see net zero as being of benefit to them, many of whom, of course, will still be looking at somewhat wistfully at the era of industrialisation when their communities felt and largely were better off.
Afternoon, James.
Hello.
Sorry about the signal.
That's right. It's not your fault.
Yeah, so geographic location doesn't really matter, but the places like Doncaster, like you said, post-industrial places, feel like a lot of government projects are essentially aimed at the already affluent areas.
Mm.
You know, HS2 is a prime example. We were told it's going to be this great train system connecting the north and London, and then it turned out the north wasn't even going to get a look in.
Yeah.
So people like that look at it and just think, you know, we're going to get promised everything and then we'll get nothing in the end.
How do you change that? I mean, first thing I'd say to them is your energy bills will come down.
Well, that's actually what I was going to go on to in a second, but part of it is, yes, we need to decouple energy bills from the price of gas. That has to be the priority for the government, that you need to directly show people that clean energy, green energy, whatever you want to call it, is cheaper. So if people switch to a clean energy provider, it will be directly cheaper rather than the same price and they're just getting told, hey, you've saved a few trees.
Yes.
Second, I think we need a total political transition. We need to ban corporate donations to political parties tomorrow. It doesn't matter if they're the Green Party, the Liberal Democrats, Labour, whoever, they shouldn't be taking any corporate money and it should be publicly funded, because you wouldn't get this level of, like Farage, corporate oil companies donating to somebody who's just going to go out there and say,
it's
hey,
not just him on this one. I think he's the only one that takes millions and pounds in secret from foreign-based billionaires, but all the actual political parties take money from business. It might be a little bit naive. It's a healthy ambition, some form of level playing field, but it might be a little bit naive to sort of cut off that funding immediately. I mean, and what if the funding was coming from net zero-based businesses who were keen to persuade governments to do more net zero?
Even then, you'd have to
take the rough with the smooth, wouldn't you? You'd have to take it both ways.
You'd have to take the rough with the smooth. Yeah. So, whether they're net zero companies, oil companies, military defence contractors, nobody should be donating to political parties because it sways them. It's just bribery. So you've got people like, you know, Richard Tice going out and saying, I don't know anything about net zero, but I don't like it.
That's not fair. He was asked the other day to provide a list of scientists that had advised him that there was no such thing as climate change, and he provided this brilliant answer.
Your view on climate science, which is that thousands of scientists disagree that net zero is not the way to tackle climate change. Who are the scientists who are advising you on that? Can you name any, the thousands of scientists?
I've got lots of people advise me. I don't list all my private advisors with regard to anything, right, whether it's net zero, whether it's housing policy, whether it's industrial policy. You know, people who advise me from all different sides, mm-hmm, who are coming at me from all different angles, very often opposing, and that's great, because that's how you listen and learn. That's who we are.
There you go. You take that back, Ross. He knows exactly what he's talking about and provided a long list of experts there who support his position.
Oh, I totally take it back.
Quite
as
right
an informed
too
individual on the subject.
Isn't he just?
But I think we need to move towards, I don't think Chinese-style political system, but a expert-led system like they do. China has just built the biggest solar plant in the world, and right now they're seeing I think the average was about 6.9 gigawatts per day, was the estimation, about 6 billion a year, I think they said. But they're seeing all these benefits on top of the power generation. They're seeing soil underneath the solar plants is getting healthier. There's moisture trapped there, so that they're seeing a regeneration of that area.
But China are a wonderful example, because they are having their cake and eating it at the moment. They're leading the world in net zero pursuits, but they're also burning fossil fuels at a scale no other country can really compete with still. But they know what the future looks like. So they're kind of filling their boots in the current climate, but preparing for the next chapter of humanity with more efficiency and more investment than any other country on the planet.
Yeah, they see what, like you said, they see what the future is. They're recognising that in the present they have to do X, Y, and Z to improve the conditions of their people, which they've done in the past 30 years. I spent 2 months in China. They're living in 2070 compared to us.
Mm.
But if we are to
well, unless they want to complain about the government or something like that. I mean, let's not get too rose-tinted about it.
Oh, no. My partner's Chinese. She's not rose-tinted about it. All her family aren't 100% pro the government. But their government is willing to make these long-term decisions that when you're bought out by corporate interests, you're never going to make. You're going to think, how do I boost?
Equally, you're never going to be able to make them when you've got an electoral cycle that puts you up for renewal every 4 or 5 years. So that's why the brief moment when it looked like there was consensus on this across the political divide probably should have got a little bit more fanfare and a little bit more celebration than it did receive. Speaking of which, why does the news today not get more celebration and more fanfare? I imagine if it was the other way round, if it turned out that the green economy on net zero had lost us a million jobs, brought down wages, and seen £500 trillion in investment move out of this country and end up somewhere else. In fact, it's the opposite. It's created more than a million jobs, it's producing higher wages, and there's nearly £500 trillion of investment currently in the pipeline. All due to a sector that is currently worth more than £100 billion a year. But, of course, there are lots of people who would explain why none of this is true. It's just that Richard Tice can't tell you. He can't tell you. You can't expect him to tell you who his advisers are or, indeed, what the advice is. You just can't. I mean, stop it. Stop being so mean. Just because he claims something doesn't mean he should have to back it up or prove it or explain it. That's just not the way things work. Thank you, Ross. Simon's in Totnes. Simon, what would you like to say?
Hello, James.
Hello,
pleasure
Tom
to speak with you.
Well, it's a bit early to say that. It might turn out to be one of the worst decisions of your life, Simon. Carry on.
Oh, I'm an optimist. I first started listening to you just before Brexit, and I'm glad you drew the parallel with Brexit, because we've got a similar situation here. We're allowing corporate interests to shape the public conversation.
Yes.
And the government is shying away from briefing the public on the very real threats and severe threats to British society in the near term, not in the distant future. And people are very unaware of it. So I'm the co-founder of the National Emergency Briefing, and we did a big event in London last year where we had actual experts briefing politicians and influential people, and we've now made a film featuring Chris Packham called The People's Emergency Briefing, and it's being screened by community groups and churches and workplaces and all sorts all over the country. And it's about briefing people. And what we're finding is that people just don't realise the effects that are coming, you know, the threats to food supply, the threats to health and national security. You know, we had a general speaking there.
Really?
And these are people, even people who are sort of quite familiar with this subject reported that I've never heard this all in one place, you know, the whole connected story. But also the great opportunity if we take genuine emergency action. And that's what we're not doing at the moment. Now, we've allowed the media narrative to manage to sort of create this idea that we're doing lots of stuff on net zero and it's costing lots of money. But when you actually look at the emissions by sector, it's pretty much only electricity emissions that are coming down, and some industrial emissions. Housing, transport, agriculture and waste are all pretty much flatlining, like with nothing much going on. Like you walk into your local town, look around, there's no sign that there's an emergency. You'd expect to see rows of scaffolding down whole streets with houses being retrofit all at once, super efficient, you know, heat pumps.
Is that happening anywhere?
There are a few test cases, as far as I'm aware, with forward-thinking councils who are trying.
Well, I meant internationally. I meant internationally more than domestically, actually. I mean, what country would be the absolute paragon of net zero pursuit?
Well, I don't. Well, I may be wrong, but I don't think there is one.
Because none of them are immune to the forces that oppose you, are they? No country is going to be immune to the dark money behind the fossil fuel industry.
Absolutely, but why shouldn't it be us that does it? You know, wouldn't there be a beautiful symmetry in the country that sort of sparked the Industrial Revolution to be the one that showed that it is possible for a major nation to sort of reach this sort of higher ground of a post-fossil fuel future where people have clean air, sort of insulated homes with massively reduced bills, expanded.
And is it simple? Is it? I mean, Germany's aiming for 2045, so other countries, but again, I mean, if somebody like you turned up and went over the books, it may turn out that some of the stuff they celebrate shouldn't be celebrated at all. I suppose as a, I'm not a neutral, I know you're right, but I'm sitting here this morning essentially wondering why the good news that the CBI has produced today is not being more widely celebrated. And you're kind of saying, well, it shouldn't be because they're not going anywhere near far enough. And there's a little bit of me that sort of throws his arms up in the air at this point and disengages entirely from the conversation. So have you got, I mean, do you understand what I mean? I almost asked you then, have you got anything nice to say about what is currently happening? But that doesn't seem like an entirely fair question.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's great the government is doing some really good stuff, but it's just not doing it fast enough or in a widespread enough way. And there are certain people in the government who are really pushing it. There are other forces holding it back. You know, so Treasury wants everything to happen within business as usual. They don't want too much spending to be going on. They don't want to bother people with it. Now, what we're calling for is that for the government to do a televised emergency briefing, like with COVID, the independent experts setting out like the threats, but also these big opportunities. Because if we really go for it, we can make life better to so many people and fast. And that's the best way to insulate ourselves from right-wing populism. Because then people will understand that these politicians who are taking large percentages of their donations from the fossil fuel industry are not their friends. They're actually threatening our very society, and that the benefits that we could have if we confronted this and switched into like wartime scale mode and move really fast. You know, 2045 is way too late. We could have those, and people could start to become better off before the next election.
This is tying in with what Ross was saying about people need to feel, for good or for ill. We're a simple species. People need to feel a personal benefit to the policies.
Totally. We've got to move fast on it. And what I would say is that please do go and watch. You can go to our website, anybriefing.org. And look at our interactive map. You can find a screening near you. There are 1,300 already on the map. And James, we'd love you to come along to one because
I'd like to.
Thank you. Well, I'll jot you some details.
Nice one. I look forward to it, and I'll meet you there. 12:46 is the time. Thank you. That's Simon Aldridge, co-founder of National Emergency Briefing. And you have that sense. I've said it before that some people are seeing what is on the horizon, and some people are denying that it's there, and the rest of us, because I'm in the middle category here, we're like spectators at Wimbledon sometimes. My instincts tell me not to trust the people that brought us Brexit, and it is almost to a man and woman, the same people who are now opposing net zero. But I didn't have the full picture of why Brexit was a stupid idea until after it had happened. And I don't know whether that was my fault or just somehow the nature of a debate when it is conducted between two conflicting sides, one of which uses exclusively rhetoric, emotions and lies, and the other one that is left using evidence, knowledge and science. 12:46 is the time.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Henry Novak can't be helped now, sadly, but should his death demand an inquiry into police training? The fallout from the Mandelson papers continues, and banned from the UK, Cenk Uygur speaks to LBC.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Hey there, it's your big McDonald's hunger corner. And it's not just any kind of hunger. It's the kind that calls for big arch. Stacked with juicy beef, cheddar cheese and big arch sauce. Oh, and don't forget those crispy onions. Hungry? You are now. Served from 11 a.m. Subject to availability. Price and participation may vary.
Get iPhone 17 in the Vodafone Business Summer Sale. iPhone 17 is built for business with all-day battery life and the powerful A19 chip. For fast, efficient performance. Experience it all on the best network for business and save £300. Hurry, offer ends the 22nd of July. Vodafone Business.
Businesses with up to 9 employees only. Based on iPhone 17 and 24-month unlimited airtime plan. Best network is awarded at the Mobile Industry Awards. Saving calculated over 36 months.
The people of Britain have bought loads of noise-cancelling headphones. With a Barclaycard Rewards credit card, you could get cash back on eligible purchases and no fees on spending overseas. What you buy is your business. Rewarding you is ours. Subject to financial status, T's and C's apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 28.9% APR representative variable and 28.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
Ready for a new kitchen? Wix Kitchen Experts can support you with clever designs and a professional installation. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £122 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop. Whoop whoop! Thank you, faraway person.
Get in tonight's draw. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. It could be you.
Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Proud partner of Team GB.
It's 12:49. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. This from Tom. Speaks for many today. I've had to pause your show, so I'm about 40 minutes behind, James. But holy moly, cans of cannoli. The callers you've had today have been insanely brilliant. What an amazing treatment of such an awful subject. And I couldn't agree more, actually. I was very blessed. We were very blessed with some extraordinary contributions. Well, discussing the murder of Henry Novak and the hideous attempts to make political capital out of it. Sadly, they will almost, so well, they will most definitely continue. 10 to 1 is the time. Simon Marks is here, his first visit of the week. It's hard to know where to start. Shall we start with the good news? His health, Donald Trump's health reports are in, and it turns out he's practically an Avenger.
He's a lion of a man, James. I know that's going to be a surprise to everybody.
Yes.
An absolute lion of a man. I mean, that is the view of none other than the White House physician. And President Trump has spent now, 4 days consistently celebrating it. I see late last night before he went to bed at 11 o'clock in the evening, he retweeted on his social media platform an article from a very pro-Trump website, Just the News, headlined, Trump scores 30 out of 30 on cognitive assessment, looks 14 years younger than he is, according to the outcome of that physical examination that was conducted last week at Walter Reed Military Medical Center just outside Washington. And the president over the weekend, in what was, even by local standards, a what they refer to here as a high-volume posting weekend on the president's social media account, was obsessed with it. I mean, at one point he took to his social media platform to say, unlike other US presidents, none of whom have ever taken an approved high-difficulty cognitive test, I scored a perfect 30 out of 30, considered extreme intelligence. And just in case everybody had missed the point, he also went on to observe, this is my fourth such test, all perfect, 120 correct answers out of 120 questions asked. It is rare that anyone gets a perfect score, especially when achieved four times in a row. So he was once again claiming, as he said before, that he is an incredibly stable genius.
Of course.
Unfortunately, everything else that was this sort of stream of detritus on his social media feed raised questions about his mental stability in the minds of many people that were looking at it. But on that cognitive score, 30 out of 30.
Well, congratulations, Mr. President. So some of the things that have exercised him to the point where, as you say, questions about his mental stability persist include the Kennedy Center, named, of course, for Kennedy, not by Kennedy, which is, I think, a crucial distinction when it comes to honouring people. And the rally that is there, or was scheduled to mark the 250th anniversary. And the fund of money for all of the people that sort of committed crimes in his name on the day of the January the 6th insurrection. They've all got him exercised. Tell us why, but make sure you leave enough time to tell us also about this phone call with Benjamin Netanyahu.
Well, let me deal with the Kennedy Center and the Anti-Weaponization Fund together, because they're kind of linked in the sense that the American media's framing of what's taking place is not entirely consistent with what is actually taking place. You're going to see headlines out there about Donald Trump is thinking of walking back his idea of setting up this $1.776 billion weaponization fund to pay off his mates who ransacked Congress on January the 6th, 2021, that Donald Trump is handing control of the Kennedy Center back to Congress. I mean, neither of that is exactly what's taking place. On the Anti-Weaponization Fund, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Mike Johnson, went to him and said, Mr. President, this idea is dead on arrival. Forget it. There's no support in the country among Republicans for this. We're not backing it. So he was basically blocked from pursuing this. The idea that he is being the big man and stepping back from this is sort of ludicrous. And similarly, on the Kennedy Center, I mean, Trump is framing the story that in his fury with the judge who has said he can't name the center after himself, even though he's already done it and it's got his name outside it, he's walking away. He's handing control of the Kennedy Center back to Congress. Well, as the judge observed, control of the Kennedy Center had never been taken away from Congress. It's not as though Donald Trump legally has control of the Kennedy Center. So those are huge reverses for him. And this America 250, this Freedom 250 set of concerts that's due to be taking place here on the National Mall later this month, part of America's 250th birthday commemorations, falling apart because you've got top musical acts, including Bret Michaels, the frontman of Poison, Martina McBride, the Commodores, various others, top acts that they had booked, all saying, we thought we were coming to take part in a national celebration. We now discover it's going to be highly politicized by the White House. We're dropping out. And that raises a bigger question here about the July 4th celebrations of America's 250th birthday that are on the horizon. Can the country come together in any kind of united way when the President of the United States is now determined to turn those celebrations into a politically infused celebration of his own administration? I think we're beginning to see a lot of public disquiet and uncertainty about the extent to which people want to participate in these events.
And that 7-hour rampage of social media postings, more than 50 in total, also saw him compare himself to George Washington, publish an image depicting his own physog chiseled into Mount Rushmore, and more threats to seize Greenland, as well as promoting an hour-long interview conducted for Fox News by his own daughter-in-law, which presumably makes GBB's attempts to interview look like Watergate, or Frost Nixon, actually, would have been a better joke if I thought of it quickly enough. And so to this phone call, this extraordinary phone call between Donald Trump and the man who reportedly persuaded him to go to war against Iran.
Yeah, I mean, I do want to make the point, James, as you and I have made before, that the first reports of this were funneled by the White House to one particular reporter at the website Axios, who is continually on the receiving end of reports from the White House that don't always turn out to be accurate.
So it's
and invariably turn out not to be an yeah, precisely. However, there are multiple media outlets saying that this call yesterday with Benjamin Netanyahu was definitely very testy. In the telling of the original report to the website Axios, at one point, President Trump said to Benjamin Netanyahu words to this effect, "You're blank crazy. You'd be in prison if it weren't for me. I'm saving your ass. Everybody hates you now. Everybody hates Israel because of this." I mean, what this underscores is two things. First of all, that Benjamin Netanyahu, you know, whatever the actual words President Trump used, Benjamin Netanyahu is acting independently of the United States, and that's partly the United States' fault. I mean, they supercharged his capacity to take the lead in Iran by agreeing to launch assaults on Iran on Benjamin Netanyahu's timetable on February the 28th. But it also underscores that President Trump is under fire from the right of his own right wing. I mean, he's under fire from leading prominent figures within his own Make America Great Again grouping. Tucker Carlson, Megyn Kelly, Candace Owens, a growing number of them, for always backing Israel. And this is coming at a time when, for the first time in the modern era, for the first time, since polling on this issue began, public support for Israel is now in the minority in the United States, no longer in the majority. That's a problem for Trump. It's also a massive problem for Democrats, especially as wealthy pro-Israel lobby groups like AIPAC continue to pollute American politics, and they're one of many groups polluting American politics with insane amounts of money. This is going to be a huge issue in the midterms and in the 2028 presidential election, as politicians of both parties have to deal with shifting public opinions here about Israel.
And you'd brought it in bang on time. What a professional. Simon Marks, what an unalloyed and permanent pleasure it is to have access to your insights. Thank you. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or indeed on the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinion. You can listen to a range of podcasts, including all of mine and some others. Download the official LBC app for free. Excuse me? Hello? Hello? It's free, you know, from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC is Tom Swarbrick. But now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Even your bit is free.
Even your bit. Yeah. It's all free.
Thank you, James. Later today, the US journalist Cenk Uygur will join me around 2:45. He's been banned from coming to the UK to speak. He's accused of spreading Jew hate, as you may or may not know. He'll tell me why he thinks that isn't true. The Campaign for Anti-Semitism, a representative of theirs, will join me after 3, and then we can get your thoughts on both. But I'm going to begin with just a desperate, desperate story, the murder of Henry Novak. And it's bad enough in and of itself. The way he was then treated before he died, in the moments before he died, by police at the scene is shattering and alarming and distressing. The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, will speak about the case shortly, and we will talk about it after that.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, the Attorney General's office is considering the jail sentence given to the killer of Henry Novak, following criticism it was too lenient. Vikram Digwa was jailed yesterday for at least 21 years for the student's murder in Southampton. Hampshire police apologised for initially handcuffing Mr. Novak, who had been stabbed after Digwa falsely claimed he'd been racially abused. Speaking to LBC, Reform leader Nigel Farage accused police of treating an accusation of a racial slur more seriously than murder.
I mean, just think of it. You've been stabbed in the street. The blue lights arrive. You think help's at hand. You say, "I've been stabbed." And the police officer says, "I don't think so."
Digwa's family has said sorry to Mr. Novak's loved ones and for bringing the Sikh community into disrepute.
A court's heard former SNP chief executive Peter Murrell bought three vehicles with funds embezzled from the party, including a motorhome he drove for just 4 miles. Prosecutors have set out how he created fake invoices to cover his offences. Alan Cameron, KC, says much of the money was spent on luxury goods.
Umbrellas with a total cost of £1,990.50. Two salt and pepper grinders from Lalique, costing £2,618.16. A robotic lawnmower, including installation for his home address, costing £3,070.
He'll be sentenced later this month. LBC has been told an all-girls school in Northern England was threatened by blackmailers who created AI sexual abuse images of pupils. Former National Police Chiefs Council lead for child protection, Simon Bailey, says it's one of a number of shocking cases.
You have offenders that are scraping the images from school websites and then blackmailing the schools because they've turned the face of a girl that they've scraped from a school into child sexual abuse material.
We've approached the Department for Education for a response. The Mayor of London has told LBC a social media ban is the only way to protect boys from the manosphere. Sir Sadiq Khan says a ban is necessary until tech companies can prove their platforms are safe for children. Read his remarks in full, exclusively on the LBC app. And UK Athletics has been fined £350,000 over the death of a Paralympian. Abdullah Hayaye was killed when a 200-kilo practice cage collapsed on his head in East London. It had been put up incorrectly. The sporting body pleaded guilty to corporate manslaughter. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 31 points at 10,370. The pound buys $1.34, €1.15. LBC weather, scattered heavy showers across the UK. Sunny spells mixed in with those, except for northern Scotland, where it'll stay cloudy. Highs of 12 to 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free, online. Just search, don't get caught out.
Sheila Fogarty on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. The Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood is due to speak in the next 10 or 15 minutes about the case of Henry Novak, the murder of Henry Novak. But as poignantly as that, as importantly as that, I imagine she will also address the claims, the allegations, the evidence that there is, which we'll hear some of in a moment, about the poor handling by police of the incident and of Henry himself as he lay dying. He was arrested, he was handcuffed, whilst telling them repeatedly, as much as he could still speak, that he'd been stabbed a number of times. Here is the audio of the police body cam footage showing officers speaking to both the killer and showing him more care and attention, I would argue, and handcuffing Henry Novak as he lay dying.
What's your name, mate?
Bobby Stud.
Right, let's get you out of there, shall we?
Bobby Stud.
You've been stabbed? Whereabouts? I don't think you have, mate.
Oh, I can't breathe.
Put the hand in the cuff, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very distressing, and I imagine a lot of you, because most of us are on social media these days, I imagine a lot of you will have seen that video in full. You can see the video if you wish to have a longer look at it, and I actually urge you to do so, if you can bear it, to get a proper sense of how that situation was handled by the police in particular. Benji Hyatt joins me, LBC South of England reporter, and Andy Hughes as well, LBC's crime correspondent and co-host of the podcast from Global, The Crime Agents. Benji, first of all, there may be people for whom this story isn't as familiar as it is to you and me and Andy. Take us back to what has been established happened.
Well, this is an incident and indeed a case that has caused utter outrage, and you can understand why listening to that clip. You know, Henry Novak, a university student, walking home from a night out, and he encounters Vikram Digwa armed with that 8-inch dagger, which he claims was part of his Sikh faith, but he used it to stab Henry multiple times. And then the incident that followed, in which police turned up on the assumption that Vikram Digwa had been racially abused, they decide to instead arrest the unarmed, the wounded student teenager who was lying on the ground. And you know, this is something that has been largely confined to the courts so far. It's now very much in the court of public opinion because of that police footage as well that's come out and the political intervention that we've seen since. If you do listen to the whole clip, you will hear Henry telling police that he could not breathe 9 times. He told them he'd been stabbed 4 times. And he did not resist. And the words used by Henry's father, Mark, to describe what we just heard are shocking, inhumane and degrading.
Instead of being treated as a dying victim, police formally arrested Henry for assault and read him his rights. That was the last thing he heard. Henry did not die with dignity. He did not die with the care he deserved. He lost consciousness before anyone believed him.
It is really important to stress that Henry's family say they still hold Vikram Digwa solely responsible for the murder of his son, not the police. But of course, he's very critical of their actions, and a police investigation is underway, or an independent office for police conduct is investigating this. The officers called to the murder are still being treated as witnesses, and the commissioner for the area in Hampshire has acknowledged, quote, serious concerns over police judgment. The police have apologised, but again said that they were lied to by Vikram Digwa, who had phoned them afterwards and claimed falsely Henry had racially abused him, and they'd got into some sort of confrontation in which the 18-year-old had knocked off this gentleman's turban. But it's clear from what the judge said in the case that Henry was sort of just inquisitive as to why a man was walking down the street with a big dagger.
On a Friday night, Saturday night, between people of that age, there would be a million different incidents where somebody's in discussion with somebody that doesn't end in this terrible tragedy. I think it's worth saying as well that the judge, on the question of who is responsible, who isn't responsible for Henry's death, the judge, am I right in saying, in the trial made it clear that Henry's injuries were not survivable?
Yeah, ultimately it wouldn't have mattered how soon he received first aid, such were the severity of his wounds. But of course, his father's arguing that
it's about dignity.
Absolutely, that he died, you know, in that condition.
And I suppose it begs a big question, it does to me when I looked at the facts of this case that we know so far. Even if Henry was always going to die of those injuries, there is, of course, for his family the question of dignity, as you've said. But if you zoom out from the case itself, there's a question of police training. What if a person had injuries that were survivable and the police mishandled it in this way that led to the death? What if the lack of ability to breathe expressed 9 times did lead to a person